Good evening, brothers and sisters of the Leaf. Coming to you live from the Tipsy Void, a bizarre alternate universe where somehow old men are able to drink and party like they're still in their 20s for one night every 2 weeks before returning to the shattered shells they call their lives the next morning. It's the Tuesday Night Cigar Club Podcast. Tonight, the boys soak in the 2017 blood-soaked horror film, The Void, while smoking the complex JSK Maduro Shaggy Foot cigar from Jossum Crawl and pounding down pint after powerful pint of Founders Breakfast Stout. Sounds like our lovable crew of Tuesday Night Heroes is going to have more fun tonight than H.P. Lovecraft at the Slimy Tentacled Creature exhibit of his local zoo. So sit back, folks, light 'em up, and enjoy the show.
Oh, there's that sweet, smooth, seductive voice of Mr. Fritz Beer. Missed it. Well, I missed it until I heard it in person last episode, our big 50th episode, last episode with Fritz Beer in attendance. That was crazy, right?
Yeah.
Woo!
Yeah. Absolutely.
I'm going to let you... All right.
Man, when you brought the water buffalo in and the Incan priestess came in...
My cover's blown. To y'all listening, this is... We're actually recording this episode, which will come after our big 50th episode, before the 50th episode, because I think we might be so wrecked from the 50th episode, we might not ever be able to record another episode. But technically, that means that this episode we're doing now takes place in the future. So remember the butterfly effect. If you so much as squash a gnat in here tonight, it could drastically affect the past.
That's not how it works at all.
Does it work that way?
All right, well, think about this, dum-dums. This episode is in the future.
Okay.
So we can drink however much we want tonight. Because the hangover we have tomorrow hasn't happened yet, and it will actually occur in the past.
Drink ye beers while ye may.
Or some other time in the future, no?
I'm just going to go with my original supposition that no, that is not how it works.
I'm so confused.
No, I'm kind of liking the way that works, though. Gather ye beers while ye may.
This is the last time. Tonight is the last time I time travel with you, Killjoys.
Do I need to start carving into the table, no fate but what we make?
No fate but what we make.
I've carved that
on
on this table every single podcast. It's just everywhere.
I'm going to hand you a knife. You need to show him. Show him the...
I am positive that the last 50th episode extravaganza went extremely well. That I am sure of. But if you can hear me speaking to you now, that means not necessarily that we're still alive after the 50th episode. Because technically I'm coming to you from the future. No, the past.
Should we start broadcasting this? Because then they'll receive it somehow. It will get into the past now. The same way that Prince of Darkness, they were picking up that radio.
We totally didn't mean...
That's the only way I can see this.
Oh, I want to talk about Prince of Darkness tonight. You know what? Fuck it. Let's just do tonight's show and just assume that we're still around to do a 51st episode after the big 50th episode.
I like that.
Does that make sense?
Am I rich by this episode?
Do you want to be?
Yes.
You are.
You're actually very, very sick.
Your positive thoughts will emanate forward, creating the destiny that you want.
Yeah, you're actually positive for a lot of things.
Oh.
Welcome, everybody, to the Tuesday Night Cigar Club, episode 51.
51.
We did it.
Yay.
We crossed the finish line. 51, baby.
We were still here. Well,
as far as you suckers listening know, 51.
Sorry, guys.
Hey,
you get what you pay for.
As you can tell if you're watching us on YouTube, this guy to my right, Mr. Cody Leshker, across from me, Mr. Jason Tuttle, I'm your host, Matt Cade. He was running a little bit late tonight for good reason. We'll get to that in a little bit.
Yeah, but
we already started drinking. I got a ton of beers here that aren't our beer of the night.
No, you're over there
still drinking some bourbon. My bourbon's gone. How's that bourbon?
It is fantastic.
Weller's, I think, is the
yes. Weller's. Yes,
Weller's.
Yeah.
So we
like Weller's. It's got a nice little sugary sweetness.
It's got a little sweetness to it.
It's a good sipping bourbon.
I really like sipping on Weller's. Tell us real quick. This is breaking news. Well, by the time this plays in the future, everybody will have known this news.
But
you know what? Let's just take a minute to recognize our favorite pub, our home away from home. You guys won an award this evening.
Correct. The Music Association of Central Texas. They give out awards for musicians, bands.
Cleanest bathroom.
Cleanest bathroom, yes.
Did you get that?
Did they?
No.
Damn you, Buc-ee's.
Actually, that award never gets won for some reason. I don't know why.
No, it is Central Texas, and it is bars. You guys won, third year in a row.
Yes, best live music club.
Best live music club.
O'Brien's Irish Pub in historic downtown Temple, Texas. Congrats, buddy.
Yes.
I will admit, I actually crossed state lines and voted in three different states for you guys to win.
That's not how it works at all.
I hope I don't.
So apparently your voting knowledge is as good as your science knowledge.
I'm just saying, if you guys squash a butterfly in here tonight, there's going to be some shit go down.
Okay.
And I feel sorry for any butterfly that comes in here. Such beautiful creatures. Why would they want to come into this place?
Flittering around and then just drop out of the sky.
It has been a while since we talked. Well, I guess... I don't know if it has been or not because the previous episode hasn't happened yet.
I don't know.
You know what? I swear I'm going to step away from all this time travel nonsense. I'm possibly contemplating blowing my brains out. I finished watching Iron Fist on Netflix the other night. And boy, you guys weren't kidding. It is just as terrible at the end as it was in the beginning.
Still waiting.
Still waiting for something. It's over. There's no more episodes. And it's coming. It's going to get good. It's going to get good. I brought up a point where we were sitting here waiting for you, Yak-Boy. You're much more in tune with the comics and the actual mythology of these characters that Marvel digs into. Did Iron Fist ever incorporate the Iron Fist into his lovemaking?
I don't think he did.
No.
Iron Finger?
Don't think it was designed for that.
Oh, this guy.
Well, I mean, you don't want to go full Iron Fist.
No, he'd start off with the Iron Pinky.
Yeah, I mean, I would think he would be nice enough to do that. What kind of dick would just be like, here's my iron fist?
She's like, whoa. Hey.
Come on.
You bought me Applebee's. Let's slow down with the iron fist.
What's up with that?
All right, the iron index finger?
Exactly. Start off a little bit.
There was none of that in the children's comic books?
None.
Shocking. Shocking. I thought that might have spiced up the TV series a little.
It's entirely possible.
They showed Luke Cage.
Oh,
doing
man.
All sorts
how about
of
a dolly shot going away from the bed, and all of a sudden, under the sheets, you get the yellow
the
glow?
The light.
Are we the only ones who find
that? Well,
if
you heard something start up, like, she's like, put that away, baby. I'm the Iron Fist.
I am the Iron Fist.
But then what if he couldn't get it going? She's like, it's okay, Iron Fist. It happens to everybody. Like, I got to go in the bathroom and refine my chi.
It doesn't happen to me.
I got to just... Give me 10 minutes to refocus my chi.
I have to rebalance my chi.
I can't focus here.
Damn it.
That never happened in the comics either.
No.
Okay. No. Tuesday Night Cigar Club does not endorse Iron Fist.
Not the show.
Not the show.
I enjoyed the character in the comic books, but he's not living up to that.
If it's the German subgenre, I might endorse it, you know, depending on whether I'm drunk or not. But oh, wait.
Not that fist.
Oh.
This is what happens when you leave us alone to drink for 2 hours before the show starts.
Sorry.
No, Iron Fist, the Netflix series. I'm a loyalist, so I will watch every damn Iron Fist that's ever out there.
You're a goddamn fool is what that means.
Unloyal. And I will watch it, and I will hate myself for watching it.
Loyalty has boundaries. That's something he would say when he's doing his stupid
little
poses.
Oh, God! You mean while he's doing, like, some weird new wave dance
loyalty
with the...
Loyalty has its boundaries.
With what's her name? And while he's doing his Tai Chi. Oh,
it's terrible. But enough about that. Blah. Let's talk about happy stuff.
Woohoo!
We've got happy stuff.
Pub of the year.
Pub of the year. Let's go on and let's talk about a good cigar. Hopefully, I haven't had it, so
I have never seen this cigar in my life. It's got a shaggy foot.
It's broken.
It's not broken.
It is broken. I'm telling you right now.
What kind of cheap cigar company is this that can't even wrap the entire cigar?
They ran out of money.
They did?
No, of course not. It's a Shaggy Foot cigar. There's tons of Shaggy cigars on the market. This is the Yasum Crawl, our number 5 cigar of last year.
Yeah.
Company, not blend.
Yeah.
Same company that got our the Red Knight Toro. Yasum Crawl Maduro Shaggy Foot.
What was the other one that we smoked this year that I really
liked? Oh, the Slotnosance, the Connecticut.
Yeah, I really liked the Slotnosance.
I'll be honest, the Slotnosance is the only cigar I've really flipped for on the show this year.
So far, it's leading me.
Well, that's one of the reasons. It had been a while since we'd kind of... We're 2 for 2 with Yasum Crawl.
Yeah.
So...
Well, you guys are. I think I was kind of like mediocre on the Red Knight.
No, you like the Red Knight. Go back and watch the episode. You can't.
I don't believe you.
These things don't lie, man. You said you liked it.
I don't believe you.
No. We all liked it. This is a 5x50 Robusto. Filler is Dominican, Peruvian, and Nicaraguan, with a Nicaraguan binder. The wrapper, Mexican San Andreas. It is a yearly release scheduled to be available every August. He only makes a certain amount of them, and basically, when it's ready in August, he sells them on his website. This would be Riste Riotovsky. I'm going to fuck that name up again. YasumCrawl.com sells them on their website every August. And they sell out very quickly.
So why is it just an August blend?
It's when the leaves, the tobacco is available. I don't know. Possibly have to do with the Peruvian filler.
I'm interested in that.
Questioning whether he actually uses Peruvian.
No, I'm interested. No, I definitely taste tea on the cold draw that is a signature from Peruvian fill.
I'm actually getting lots of tea on the cold
draw. Exactly. It's amazing.
I'm drinking tea as we speak.
I'm curious about Peruvian fillers because you don't really run across it that often in the cigar industry.
I believe we talked with Saka a bit about Peruvian tobaccos.
I totally don't remember that.
Unfortunately,
one.
I was drinking.
Yeah, I don't remember that. I do remember Sokka saying that you know, there's a lot of fillers out there from different countries.
I
want to
say that he
vouched
for it, saying that Peruvian tobacco got a bad name.
Right.
And he liked it.
I remember him saying that there's some Indonesian tobaccos. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of tobaccos that are out there in countries that are not normally associated with, you know, these cigar meccas.
Correct.
But Peruvian, I'm like, that's an odd origin country. What's the origin story on Peruvian tobacco? Mm.
Well, that's all I'm going to give you. I actually picked Riste's brain a little bit about the actual components of it, but he asked me to keep that a little closer to my chest. So,
and you can't share that with your buds here?
I'll share with you when the microphones are off. But
it's probably wise. As much bourbon as I've drank tonight, well, I'd be like, so that has spirit of... Okay.
There's, as noble of industry as it is, there's some chicanery going on. You don't want to show your cards too much.
I'm sorry, as noble as industry as it is? No, they're a bunch of bullshit artists. They don't divulge what their blends are.
The smart ones don't.
Exactly.
So that's all I'm going to tell you right now. Limited release. We are fans, I know at least you and I are, the Mexican San Andreas.
Yes.
It is a shaggy foot, which means the wrapper does not extend down the bunch. It's going to smoke typically a lot initially.
Right.
Because you're burning just those just unrestrained leaves at the end.
Right.
But then once it hits that wrapper, usually it calms down, it cools down. And I can't tell you what to expect flavor-wise. I can't tell you what to expect profile-wise, strength-wise. Let's just see.
I'm shocked. I'll tell you right now, on the cold draw, I'm shocked that I get the tea. I really like that kind of sensation on there. What were the country origins on the fillers? Peruvian?
Peruvian, I believe, Dominican, and Nicaraguan. With a Nicaraguan binder, and then the San Andreas wrapper.
What factory did these come out of? Do you know?
Riste uses, and I'll edit this if I'm wrong. He uses the Noel Perez, the same guys who made the. We featured their cigar. What's a goddamn cigar I couldn't pronounce? A Guayaquil?
Yeah, the Guayaquil. Oh, that also got highly rated.
Guayaquil.
Yeah.
Guayaquil. With the Entubo rolling?
Yeah.
For the smooth airflow?
Yeah.
Guayaquil?
You know what? I'm fucking up that name.
Do you want to be a quiet don't or a quiet can?
Mm. I can't believe you went there.
I like it.
Actually, as much bourbon as we've drank. And we still have a whole show to do.
We haven't even cracked open our main beer.
It's Noel Rojas Sabatier.
Okay.
Is the factory owner, I believe.
And they also do the Guayaquil.
And all the Yasum Crawl.
And the Yasum Crawl
lines. I believe
lines.
So, yes.
Okay,
all right. Riste will let us know if I fuck that up.
Yeah. But all of a sudden the mafia shows up at your door.
The Peruvian mafia? Peruvian mafia?
I've been
married for... No, that's yeah. Sam Kinison joke.
Sam Kinison line. I'm not fucking with Riste.
Oh, those Macedonians are, even if you don't like the cigar, it'd be nice.
No, he's cool.
We're always fair.
Well, my name is Cody Lester.
I'm going to be honest. In this golden age of social media, I went to get tonight's beer. And tonight's movie, we try to work it in with the movie. And tonight's movie is so fucking crazy.
It's balls crazy.
There's nothing on the wall that screamed to me.
Unless there was an IPA called Balls IPA.
Yeah. Or just fucking crazy West Coast IPA.
Well, the only other thing that I would say, if you were trying to find some sort of theme, you should have went with Bass. It has a red triangle.
It does have a triangle.
I didn't think about that. But so what I did...
I think Bass would not be...
No.
Thanks
to the golden age of social media, I could actually message Riste, the blender of the cigar, owner of the cigar, and say, hey, what would you... any pairing recommendations? And the first beer he said was this one. There was a Ballast Point Victory at Sea he recommended. Cigar City out of Tampa, I think. Their brewery had one he liked. But, dude, he said this, and I... Our local spot actually had it, so no tie-in whatsoever to tonight's movie. Hey, sometimes we get it, sometimes we don't.
Well, yeah.
But
technically, they're talking about children, and there's a baby on the
bottom. There's a little baby on here. But no,
it's a loose tie-in, but it works.
Hey,
run with it.
I believe it is the first time I've ever asked a cigar manufacturer what to drink with it.
Yeah.
And he did it. So let's see how that plays out. I still haven't said what it is. That's your job. Tell us what we're drinking.
Founders Breakfast Stout. Made by Founders Brewing, which in actuality is actually named Canal Street Brewing Company. Founders is actually a thing that came about from them actually... The first bottles that they printed, the original label included an old black and white photo of the original Canal Street Breweries... from where they're located. What's in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Okay.
And above that picture on their label, they would write the word Founders. Because where they're located, actually there was a number of breweries back in the day located on Canal Street.
Okay.
And of course they went away, and then of course the new breweries are trying to start it back up. They were one of them. They started in 96. Two gentlemen by the name of Mike Stevens and Dave Ingbers began operations. And
what year? I'm sorry.
96.
96. Oh, well. Okay. Yeah.
So Founders became their go-to name. And then over time, as opposed to just calling it Canal Street, they decided they'd just change it outright and call it Founders Brewery.
I'm just saying, sorry to interrupt you real quick, but that pours black as oil.
It does. Absolutely. The beer we're drinking is labeled as an Imperial Stout. They actually label it more as an Imperial Coffee Stout.
Okay.
Their own...
I always thought that kind of went hand in hand.
Not necessarily. The Imperial Stout actually started out as a English, much like the English made the Imperial, the India Pale Ale.
Yeah.
So that it would survive the long trip to, the beer would survive the long trip to India on the ships. This was actually made to be a little bit closer to where it was going to more of the, to Russia and the surrounding countries. But their tastes were much different. They, they wanted a stout beer, a strong stout beer.
Hardy.
And at the time they were making this style of beer for the actual Russian court, Catherine the second.
It's kind of weird because I've never known where the term imperial came from on the imperial stout.
The Ruskies.
But I always had, like, in the back of my mind, Russia, the Russian imperial court.
Yes.
For some reason. Maybe it was the whole episode where we just got schnockered off of old Rasputin.
And that's actually we reviewed
that beer?
Yes.
Yes. That one was would that actually have been perfect for
was
tonight.
Was that the Maggie episode?
That was the Charlie Sheen biker episode.
Oh, nice.
We got fucked up. That was a good one.
But, yeah, so this style of beer was made for that. And, of course, it's been... it's still obviously made, and a lot of the breweries here have really started to... They jumped on that boat and...
Big time, especially the craft brewers on the coffee and the oatmeal side. Not more so the coffee side of it.
Yeah, a lot, especially the American crafters love the coffee on the imperial side.
Founder's own description of this beer is the coffee lover's consummate beer, brewed with an abundance of flaked oats, bitter and imported chocolates, and two types of coffee. The stout has an intense, fresh-roasted Java nose topped with a frothy, cinnamon-colored head that goes forever.
Okay, one, it does have the cinnamon-colored head if you pour it without it. But if you get your nose, like, right down in that glass...
Everybody stick your nose in it.
I'm telling you, if you put your nose right down in there, you're smelling Java.
Mm-hmm.
Which is not a bad thing.
No, and I get a much better... Look at that cinnamon-colored head.
Yeah, especially when you stick your schnoz right down in there.
I actually drank quite a bit of the pint through my nose. Hey, has anybody ever done a podcast where they drink their beers through their nose?
I don't really want to
start. Come on, boys.
I'm not there.
Come on.
No.
All right. I tried, folks. God forbid we'd innovate something.
But the Imperial Stouts tend to be higher ABV. This one's 8.3.
Ooh.
They usually say they...
Nice. Wrong night.
No,
perfect night.
They tend to say that they usually come in at around 9 or higher.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is way less. The Rasputin is almost 10.
But now, surprisingly, for Stout, this also has about a 60 IBU.
Yeah, that's what's saving it for me on these initial sips. I say initial sips.
You got
second,
a little bit of
my
hop.
Second one. I'm getting a little bit of that bitterness.
That bitterness coming through.
And
there.
For a guy who doesn't really like stouts, especially coffee stouts, man, that bitterness is nice and unusual.
Look how black that is.
I don't know if I've had a stout with that high of an IBU before. I like it.
But Riste, I've got to say that, you know, your boy Skip, I see you giving Skip a lot of shit and Skip giving you a lot of shit. You know, he would look at an 8% stout and go, what the fuck, man?
Skip,
Riste would go, that's why it's called a breakfast stout. I'm not even sure if that's a Macedonian accent.
I don't think Macedonians talk like Arnold. Was that your own voice?
I don't know.
Yeah. Skip Bean, Roma Crafts Cigars. Founding father, who is a huge coffee stout fan.
Yeah.
As long as their ABVs are over 20.
But that's why Riste is like, of course, this is a
Crumb laughs stout. At your 8 ABV. It's not bad.
I like it. I'll tell you right now, I don't like it.
I knew you.
No, the bitterness isn't.
I bet you love it
extremely
too.
Present.
I do.
It's got the coffee notes, but it's not like. Just, you know, man, there's an interesting, weird powder sense
this
that's
is
almost
nothing,
in there on that
This
that
is
coffee.
Nothing that I would probably, you guys know me, that I would probably drink in a pub.
Yeah.
I am highly curious, because it was recommended by the blender of our cigar, to see how the pairing works.
I would order this in a pub. I wouldn't go to it all the time. I'm a fan of stouts. I like the coffee.
Here's the thing, too.
But I also like a little bit more of the creamy side of stouts than the coffee side.
I say that, too, but I think I also have to kind of remind our listeners. I think they know by now, but others, you know, when we say we wouldn't go to it regularly at a pub, I think a lot of people go to the pub and try something new.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And then maybe go to something that they're familiar with.
Yeah.
And after those two drinks, go home.
Yeah, we don't do that.
We do that. We tend to. That's really good. Let's see how it tastes 10 pints from now.
The way I kind of approach my pub visits is that I will get the first beer. I'll try to do something that I haven't tried before.
Uh-huh.
If it's just way out of my
wheelhouse, do you ask the O'Brien staff for recommendations?
Absolutely. I'll admit that I don't because. You know,
you're an internet beer expert from the podcast.
Exactly, and I don't want to be shown up by the O'Brien staff. So basically what I'll do is I'll look for something new, and I'll be like, oh, tell me what that Golden Pyramid beer is. And then they'll tell me a little bit about it, and I'm like, man, that really sounds like crap. Give it to me. And then I'll try it. I mean, because everybody's like, well, we can pour a little sifter of it here, and, you know, take this little sifter and tell you what I think. You can't tell a beer from a sifter.
No, you cannot.
Get you a fucking pint of that thing and own it. I mean, if it sucks, just own it and drink it. It's a pint. What's it going to do to you?
At the very end, it gets you one step closer to where you want to be.
Yeah. So I usually start out with like a beer I've never tried before. If it really shocks me and I'm like, oh, this sucks, then I'll go to something that I have tried before. And then on the third beer, it's really interesting. If I have struck out with the first two beers, I'll usually go to Guinness. That's my comfort zone, my security blanket. And then, but usually what will happen is that, you know, the O'Brien's people will put me onto something that's kind of interesting, but not really in my wheelhouse. And then by the third beer, I'm starting to get a little bit okay enough to where I start just drinking whatever crap they sell me.
Hear that? Listen to this.
I do.
And by crap, I mean quality outstanding. Apricot infused IPAs.
I like it.
No, that's horrible.
A lot of apricots.
I like it. But I am an IPA guy.
Anything? I turned you on to them, and you haven't looked back.
What?
Yeah, I'm
pretty sure that you did not.
I got
turn
one of those
Cody
Facebook
on.
Reminders about like 3 years ago.
3 years ago, you had an
it was one of our first episodes, and it was like, well, you know, I'm a whiskey guy. I don't really drink beer, but I'm gonna try to do it for this podcast thing. Now I'm just
I'm an IPA guy.
I'm just every morning I'm gargling with it. I can't get enough craft beer. It's just wonderful, wonderful stuff. Anything else, Yak Boy, about the beer? Our oatmeal, chocolate, coffee, deliciousness.
Correct.
Where was the city again?
Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Michigan.
I believe that's where Ted Nugent's from.
I'm just saying that out of this cigar, I taste a lot of Nugent. It's cool.
You get Nugent?
Yeah, I get a lot of Nugent in there. A little caramel, some Nugent.
I wanted to talk about the cigar once we all got down, because it smokes for about 5 minutes before it actually hits the wrapper.
And it does smoke.
Oh, and there's nothing containing that smoke. There's no wrapper there.
It's basically just a fire.
Yeah. I mean, it's a shaggy foot. It's going to burn that tobacco. But the minute it...
But it's not like a smoke
No,
fest.
No, no.
It's not like a smoke bomb.
No, it's not.
It's like there's some Drew cigars that the moment you light it...
Of course.
You need a fire extinguisher right there for you.
You do.
This totally isn't that.
No. Mine just now hit the wrapper. Yeah, I think maybe this pairing might work.
Did you retrohale? I just say that there's... Man, that tea flavor is consistent even after the light. I haven't got to the wrapper yet.
Still getting tea, huh?
I'm still getting green tea.
I am getting... Dude, you know what? I am getting a little green tea. I'm also I'm getting some cedar. Wait till the wrapper hits. That's where the cedar will come in. I'm also getting a little cream. Now that the wrapper is working itself into it. I mentioned earlier, I mean, I'm a big Mexican San Andreas fan.
Yeah, yeah.
When it's a nice Mexican wrapper. I gotta think, because that tea is such a unique. Are you getting the tea?
I am.
I got it as a novice, as a non-blend. I gotta give it to
Peruvian.
I gotta give it to Peru.
That's the one tobacco filler that we're unfamiliar with, and all of a sudden,
correct.
It's kind of thrown.
I've got to give that to Peru.
All of a sudden, Mistay's like, dude, that's totally not it. You fucking novices.
I will say this, for a shaggy foot, the minute that wrapper started burning, straight burn line, it just picked it up and completely just, that's where the shaggy started. It's a uniform ash. Give it a minute. Sit with your thoughts for a little bit, boys, with the beer and the cigar.
I'm getting a little bit of that cream. I am getting that cream, and I hardly ever get cream.
Actually, last episode you said, or I'm sorry, two episodes ago, because we're in the future, you said you never tasted cream in a cigar.
Yeah, that's totally, and it's got a little hint of cinnamon too. But that's all. That's all retro hell too.
It's part of the deal. I'm not getting any cinnamon right
just
now.
As a retro hell expert,
as an internet retro hell expert, I'm getting the cream, the cedar. I'm getting the really nice tea. So far, so good. Let me go ahead and introduce the film tonight, boys.
It's shit. Turn your podcast off right now.
Why not? Tuttle's got some things to say about tonight's film, and I've been stifling him till you showed up, Yak Boy. I've been, shut up! Save it! Shut up!
Stifling or stifling?
I've heard it both ways.
Yeah.
I would go with stifling.
Stifling.
2017's The Void. Written and directed by Jeremy Gillespie and Stephen Kostanowski. They don't have much directorially under their belts, but they have a history in both the art and makeup departments on major films.
Yeah.
It reminds me of another film we did on the show, Deathgasm, who the director was real big in the visual effects world, X-Men and huge movies before he stepped behind the camera as a director. Both these fellows are members of Astron 6. Astron 6 is a Canadian film production directing company founded in 2007, 10 years ago, by Jeremy Gillespie and a guy named Adam Brooks. They're known for producing low-budget, 80s-centric kind of independent movies, a lot of horror movies, with comedy.
Yeah.
Kind of made their own little trauma studio up in Canada over the last 10 years. I don't use that disparagingly. I just mean in-house, they use the same six directors, the same actors, the same...
Right.
They did one. Cody, we might have thought about doing this on the show at one point. Manborg.
Oh, yeah.
They did Manborg. They did another slasher, I think, film, Father's Day. But very, very low budget, but creative horror movies with comedy infused. Gillespie and Kostanski directed tonight's film, The Void, intending it to be a departure from their more Astron 6's more comedic work. And also showcasing Kostanski's creature and practical special effects. These guys, Astron 6, have been on my radar for a while. I've wanted to see. I haven't seen Manborg. I didn't see Father's Day. But I've known about them. And this probably isn't the best entry point into Astron 6 because it's so different, apparently, and much more straight. Straight narrative, less bullshit. Humor.
I was about to say, when you talked about that being humor, there wasn't a lot of humor in this. There wasn't any humor.
This was their departure, and this is the first one I've seen.
This is them trying to go legit.
So I'm
kind
of curious
horror.
To go back and look at some of their other stuff. I wish somebody in Texas would start a director's collective and invite me in.
They do have a director's collective, and yeah.
They don't want me. They hate me.
Fuck that Tuesday night crew. Matter of fact, I could. They have a cinematographers collective, and they were like, "Dude, if you would just ditch him."
Oh, ditch me? You didn't. Oh, ditch him?
Yeah, Cody.
Oh, shit.
Well, I guess I'll just sit here silently.
How you guys liking the scar? Before we get in this film, I think the pairing is working well.
So far, so good. I like it.
I will say this.
I'm glad I'm retrohaling this because
you got to, buddy.
There's
all the flavors are coming through the retrohale.
And that's what's pairing well with the Imperial. I'll tell you what's weird is
the
that
cream,
I'm,
especially through the retrohale.
And I'm losing the coffee on the stout, the coffee dominance of the stout flavors. Yeah. When the cigar flavors meld with that coffee or with the Imperial stout, the coffee takes a back seat. I'm getting a bit more of that sweetness, that tea sweetness with a little bit of the cinnamon flavor through it, which is, you know, downplaying that coffee. The cigar flavor through the retrohale is kind of manhandling the Imperial Stout flavor.
I'm getting nothing but cream, cedar, and tea.
Yeah.
Both through the retrohale and through the drag. And I'll admit, the first pint, I wasn't really feeling the beer. It's just not my... Not because it's bad beer. It's just not my style.
It's not your style.
It's really mellowing out the beer for me.
It's funny. When the burn line hits that wrapper, you get more of a traditional smoke flow profile.
Well, dude, that's crazy. Because it's just loose leaves hanging out.
Yeah.
The fact that it could stay uniform to where when it hits the wrapper, it just makes a perfect straight burn line. Just from a physics standpoint, that's impressive.
They know what they're doing.
They know what they're doing.
Feel bad about saying Guinacon wrong all those years.
Do you feel bad about saying it wrong right now?
Quaken.
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 I actually think I was saying it right. You guys just give me shit.
No, you weren't. Saying it all wrong.
Have you seen what we drank before you even showed up here tonight? This is what we're in store for. This is what's happening.
Just don't flip over the table tonight.
No. It's not one of those nights.
At least let me clear the mics off of it first.
Promise. I'll give you forewarning. I am liking the cigar. It's a very... You know what? What's surprising for a Mexican San Andreas wrapper, usually it has that little bit of spice to it.
Yeah.
I'm not getting that so far. It's muted. It's there. But it's so subtle. Really, the cream and the tea and the cedar are dominating that spice. I'm wondering if that's going to pick up at some point.
It is there. It is so, like you said, muted and subtle that.
But it gives you a nice
kind of cool.
It gives you a nice little burn on the back of your throat. I like it.
I'm gonna say instead of cinnamon, it's more like Indian cardamom. Or is it Caramon?
Yeah, well, you do me a favor real quick. Can you reach over there and punch him square in the nards?
No, I'm sorry. It's like poppy seed.
Poppy seed.
I was going to say more like a paprika, like kind of an Indian spice.
No. Paprika is way too smoky than this.
I've never had paprika. I was trying to impress you guys. I've had paprika. It's nothing like... I was just joking.
Come over to our house more. You'll have more paprika...
Paprika pancakes.
More cumin.
It's interesting. Any thoughts on a cigar and the beer before I move on?
At the moment.
It might be a little while before I get back to
we'll
it.
See.
I really think the cigar is balancing out the things that are overpowering for me in the beer.
I agree. I'm
actually tasting more of the oatmeal in the beer since I started the cigar. The coffee's a little bit muted. I never really got much of the chocolate in it.
No, I haven't got any chocolate.
But you know that something about that overpowering coffee kind of turns me off. Boy, this cigar just squashed it in a nice way.
I can't remember a cigar ever really stepping up to a beer and putting it in its place.
I like
All
it. Right. Okay. Well, the movie is The Void, 2017. I give you a little background on the filmmakers. Let's get into the film. This film is in my little horror world of online people that still talk about horror films like they're the greatest thing since sliced bread. A lot of people talking about this film. I really was antsy to dig into it.
I'm actually curious about that because I've often wondered, like, where has the non-Saw, the non-Purge horror films gone?
You know, we're
you're always telling me, no, they're out there. No, they're just not mainstream.
Real quick, we're at a weird point in horror where Fangoria magazine is gone. A lot of the other stuff is strictly online. There are still some print magazines. You got to seek them out. But, you know, I come from my 20s and 30s. Every weekend was going to the bookstore and trying to buy up all the copies of Fangoria and Rue Morgue and scouring through them and see what all these new movies were. And hell, a movie that you had no kind of sense other than what you read was about, you would have to order the DVD in early 2000s. I'd pay $20
right.
to get a DVD of a movie that I had no clue if I would like or not. There was no video on demand. There was no... You're craving content. You're craving good genre content. And those entities like Fangoria and Rue Morgue Magazine and Horror Hound were kind of your gateways to that. And that they're not really that present anymore in a physical sense. They're more online.
Right.
You know. But The Void has kind of permeated into mainstream and mainstream things. And when it gets to that point to where it's not just the horror nerds talking about it, but actual, you know, non-horror sites talking about it.
Yeah.
That's what kind of picks up the radar, like, you know what, maybe...
I think it's interesting is that you've had a bit of play on the horror comedy scene for like the last 5-6 years. And I think that might be the gateway genre into the actual horror deal.
For guys like you, yes.
For me, yeah.
Guys like you, that's a huge thing. The Zombie Guide to the Apocalypse, the Shaun of the Dead.
The Deathgasm.
You got the Deathgasm. Find a hook that you got, you know, oh, heavy metal guy gets, or, you know, a slacker falls in love with a zombie.
But even then,
for a non-horror guy, that could be your hook.
But also you come in with the thriller aspect of it, the Devil's Candy, and I'm like, oh, I love the Devil's Candy. Well, let's move into more of a horror type deal.
Well, this is straight up horror filmmaking. Straight up genre filmmaking. No horror comedies.
No bullshit.
No bullshit. This is a straight up horror movie. We haven't done one of these in a while.
Cody, do Devil's you like straight up horror stuff?
He doesn't. Not necessarily.
Okay. This one was a little different. I mean, it you know, obviously we'll get to it here, but I mean, it in terms of its tone and, you know, it drew from so many other wells.
It doesn't wear its influences
I just
on its
make
sleeve.
Sure
it holds them up on a silver platter.
I just want to see where everybody's from, make sure I'm on the same page before we start gutting this thing.
And we will go. We got everything. It's not a bad term. We rip these movies apart and see all the black stuff inside. This is not necessarily something that you would go to and say, I got to see this. It's definitely not something you would go to and got to see this. But this was definitely one for me. I'm like, hey, man, if I'm going to drop $7 on a video on demand rental, we're going to do it on the show. It was a little bit more pricey. You guys, Amazon?
Yeah. $6.99.
$7 for, but for like a week long rental, which is nice. Yeah. Usually the stuff we rent is like a 48-hour rental tops. They at least give you like
a week. The 48-hour. Only $5.
Get out. Get out of here.
Sorry.
Well, it's nighttime as our opening scene finds a young man named James hauling major ass out the front door of an old country house. He's followed by a young girl who's immediately shot in the back by a rifle, crumples down the ground just as she reaches the bottom steps of the front porch. She collapses to the ground as two men emerge from the house. The older man with the rifle, we're going to call him the father.
All right.
Hands the younger man, we're going to call him the son, a gas can. And the son proceeds to douse the wounded woman in gasoline while
it's a hard scene.
The dad lights up a cigarette. I'm going to talk to you about how hard.
And the whole time, you know, the great thing here is, you know, they're not really showing her.
Right.
He's at their feet, and you just hear this crying and this the sort of pleading.
I'm going to talk about this in a second because I kind of disagree with you, boys.
But it's interesting because you got the father who's just hard as nails, throwing it down.
The son is clearly conflicted as he's dousing her with gasoline.
It's a little bit overacted on the conflicted part.
Well, the father lights up. The father lights up a cigarette. I disagree with you guys here, so I want to get to it so I can kind of the father looks out into the distance and says, "The kid on the run won't get far."
Yeah,
and then he takes one big drag on the cigarette, tosses it down on the girl's body, which immediately goes up in flames.
And that's where I have a problem.
You guys seem to think it was an effective scene. I didn't think there was enough screaming from her. I didn't think when he dropped the cigarette on her, to a wide shot, they're watching a campfire burn. There's no movement in the flames.
Yeah.
That scene could have been so much more harrowing if she was screaming and you saw an actual body on fire.
To me, it didn't need to be way.
For an opening scene of a movie, to set the pace for craziness?
Well, you're like horror expert steeped
in it. I needed to hear more screaming, more movement in that fire. It just looked like they were watching trash burn on their front yard.
Yeah.
I needed to sell that.
Weren't they, Cade, though? Weren't they?
The moment
I wasn't feeling it.
The moment that they were splashing her with the gas.
That was enough?
That was enough.
Pouring gas on a girl.
Now, where it lost me is the cigarette toss to light it. That, to me, that was cliche and over the top. And I would have
been okay with
it
if she had actually screamed in pain and we had seen like a flaming figure on fire.
Yeah.
I just thought it reeked of low budget that they just stood there and watched.
You just said it was low budget.
No, I didn't say it was low. I don't know what the budget of this thing was.
Oh. Does anybody know what it was?
Possibly.
Relatively low budget, but you could make some movement in those flames, I would think, and add some screaming. The screaming is not there once the fire. It's just a dead fire. And I kind of thought that was like, man, this could have been a really cool opening scene, but it was... It's like, man, you kind of lost a little something there. Not that I want to see young women in flames.
I was about to say, you're kind of scaring me right now. I'll
set you on fire later. We'll see how...
Trust me, there'll be lots of screaming.
I'll see how it's really...
It'll sound just like a young woman.
Oh, I know. Well, after a quick opening credit sequence where we're shown glimpses of the surrounding area, an old hotel sign, a blinking radio tower, all at night, kind of just atmospheric moonlight lit small town stuff. We're introduced to Officer Daniel Carter, played by Aaron Poole.
Kilgraves.
Who we've seen before in what on the podcast? You know.
What?
He was the lead actor in a movie that we reviewed on this fucking thing. The Conspiracy.
Oh, yes. Yeah, no, he played the...
He was the hipster.
Yeah.
The guy that got sucked into the Illuminati... And refused to shave for the...
Yeah, I totally did.
That's him.
Wore the jacket and everything.
And now he's an unshaven, long-haired hipster doofus cop.
I didn't pick up on that.
Yeah, he's the lead dude in the Conspiracy.
For some reason, when I see him in this, I see Kilgraves from Jessica Jones.
Maybe his son. Yeah. Kilgraves old.
I looked at him and I was like, he was just like a... For some reason, I saw him and I'm like, only I can... I don't know why I thought this, but all I could think was, like, he looks like he's, like, a really, like, the son of, like, George Lazenby with his hair, like, slicked over.
Long, slick back hair. He's unshaven, which looks nothing like a police officer. And remember how we had problems with him in the Conspiracy, how he wouldn't shave?
Yeah.
Or try to, like, change his look.
So they're like, we really need you to shave and look like a police officer.
This actor will not change his... All right, I know you wouldn't do it for the Conspiracy. Will you shave for this police officer? Nope.
We need you to shave and get a buzz cut.
No.
Grow a mustache, maybe?
Uh-huh.
Nope.
Uh-uh.
No.
I am the opposite of Daniel Day-Lewis. The role becomes me. I don't become the role. All right, Aaron.
Well,
we got
the best we could with the funds available.
That said,
he's the only young working actor in Canada.
But I like this guy.
I don't.
I like it, at least in this role, in this group of actors, I like him.
Okay.
No, I didn't really realize that was him.
I totally did.
There was other guys in the film that I was like, oh my god.
No, little moments, they're little small guys, I reckon. Really? Tiny. All
right, we'll get into that.
Well, we join the unshaven police officer Carter as he half sleeps in his patrol car on a quiet night on the outskirts of town. Just as he's about to call an end to his shift, the young man from the opening scene that shot out of the house, James, crawls out of the woods on all fours, and he's in really bad shape, barely breathing. He looks rough. So Officer Carter gets James in his patrol car, and they race towards the closest hospital, Marsh County Memorial Hospital, which dispatch says is running on a skeleton crew after having suffered a recent fire.
Yeah.
It's in the process of relocating, but the next nearest option is like 20 miles away, and like, it's your call, but he looks in the back seat, and this guy's in, you know, he's like, all right, fine, we'll go to Marsh County. He's not happy about it for reasons we'll learn later why Officer Carter doesn't want to go to Marsh County, but he doesn't have much choice. So Carter carries James into the emergency room at the hospital, where he's greeted by the head nurse, Allison, who happens to be Officer Carter's ex-wife.
That's why he didn't want to go there.
And another nurse named Beverly. As they rush James back on a stretcher to see Dr. Powell, Carter takes a seat in the waiting room with an elderly man, Ben, an old guy, and his pregnant granddaughter, Maggie. He knows, Officer Carter knows the doctor.
Yeah.
He knows the old man,
obviously,
Ben and
Maggie. Obviously, it's a small
town. Super small town. Everybody knows everybody. They do a very good job of establishing that quickly. I'll give them that. In a nearby hospital room, a young Asian nurse in training, Kim, is hanging out in the patient's room, and she's showing him gruesome surgery pictures in her textbook.
This nurse.
She's a hot little Asian. He's trying not to seem too grossed out, but Asian nurse in training.
All right, one.
That's a script, by the way, I wrote.
Asian nurse in training.
That should be made.
That can't be made now.
She's just terrible.
First of all, she is super hot, and she is super terrible. There is, every time she's on the scene, I'm just like, really? You couldn't find anybody? I know she's hot, but you couldn't find anybody better than this. This is bad.
I didn't find her that hot.
She's
I
cute.
I found her just incredibly untalented.
No, she was not. It was one trick.
Yeah, boy, untalented as an actress.
Yeah.
I really kind of liked her.
Yeah. Once again, I'm fairly certain. You liked
Asian nurses.
Yak's got a little yellow fever.
That's different. I could tell that they spent their money on other things.
They did spend their money on other things.
Look, we just need a warm body to fill this thing. Get somebody in here.
By the way, this person
is so bad.
But she is so bad. She is so over the top. I mean, it was just, there is no way any human can act like this in all of her situations.
If there was some way they could just shove her into a closet until the movie was over. Oh, wait.
Did you read my script, Asian Warm Bodies?
No, I didn't. So much work that you haven't let me see.
I will say this for Hollywood, at least they hired Asian on this one.
Is that what's in that filing cabinet?
Normally they don't.
This was not Hollywood, my friend.
Oh, this was Canadian?
This was Canadian.
No wonder.
Okay, well, enough about Kim, the Asian nurse in training, which this is the one time I'm not excited about saying that. Rant alert. I'm going to rant for a second.
Oh, God.
I don't do it a lot here.
You do it every podcast.
Let me take a drag here before. This is a big rant.
Juju, oh, crap, we're at the same pace.
It is a Robusto, so, and I'm making a concerted effort to smoke slow, and I think maybe you are too.
Well, I think I've lit up like 10 minutes after you did.
Did you ding-dongs notice what movie was playing in that patient where Asian nurse in training Kim?
No.
You would not. Did you notice what movie was playing on the TV in the patient's room?
What movie was playing?
It was George Romero's Night of the Living Dead. Was playing in black and white on the patient's TV room while she was showing him her gruesome textbook photos.
Interesting. So you got a Siege movie.
Siege movie?
A
heavy je.
A je. Okay, so you got a Siege movie playing in the background of a Siege movie?
That's not what bothers me.
What bothers you?
It is a pet peeve of mine. Due to a careless mistake when producing the film prints of Night of the Living Dead back in 1968, the film went out to theaters without a copyright notice anywhere on the credits.
So
or
they can,
any legal thing. So ever since it was released back in 1968, anybody who wants to can distribute the film. I could put out DVDs of Night of the Living Dead right now and sell them.
Really?
You can show it. You can remake
oh,
it.
Man.
Without George Romero, the godfather, inventor of the zombie genre, seeing a dime from what you do.
Yeah.
It's always been public domain since day one.
So they stiffed him?
Everyone has. That leaving off that copyright symbol has screwed that dude. I met George Romero. I have his.
I did not know
here
that.
Here in the corner of Hope, I have a Laserdisc autographed Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah, big time.
Generous, warm. You couldn't meet a nicer guy.
Has there ever been anybody who's actually given him stuff?
He's made other works.
No, he has made other works.
My main point
here is this with young filmmakers. If you're going to bitch about how you can't make a living making films anymore because no one is buying the big films to put out in the theaters, it's all video on demand or it's all limited release. So it's like, oh, you know what? I got to get a day job in between films. It's a huge thing, a huge bitching thing in the indie film world.
Yeah.
And then you're going to put fucking Night of Living Dead on a TV screen.
Yeah.
And basically rip off George Romero one more time where he doesn't see a dime. It's not paying tribute.
Well, how do you know that they didn't pay him a dime?
They didn't pay him a dime.
Okay. Are you sure?
Nobody does. And I say this as Halloween 2 did it. They had John Carpenter produced. They had Night of the Living Dead on TV there. It's free. It's well known.
Yeah.
You can show it.
Yeah.
But don't you bitch about how nobody's making money in today's world with piracy and nobody's, you know, paying for movies, and then you're going to just queue up George Romero on there. Get you or your fucking friends and your cell phone camera and shoot 2 minutes of a chick running through the woods or whatever and put that on your TV screen.
I'm just saying motherfucker should have put a copyright on his shit.
He should have sued.
He can because there's no...
Dude,
copyright
in 1968, trademark. If you did not have that, I'm not going to get into a big copyright law discussion. I don't know the semantics of it.
We're not copyright
But if you didn't
experts.
Have that fucking copyright symbol on the print of your film as it went out to drive-ins and everywhere across the United States, any asshole could show it, not
you
pay
know that
you.
That would be me.
That would totally be you.
No, that's one thing that it's kind of funny because even in our own works, are just freaking casual. Let's have fun and make shit, you know, you're always like pay the people, don't I'm like, hey, or let's use this asset, I found it on Google, and you're like, fuck that, pay them.
Well, everyone deserves to be paid. Yeah. Well, if you took a picture, you deserve to be paid.
I understand
if
that
if you shot a frame of film and we're using it, you deserve to be paid.
Well, let me ask you this, because this is always the thing that I get from it. How long is copyright supposed to last?
That, yeah,
well, you can renew and re-register copyrights. Again, I'm just saying, since the goddamn first time he put this movie out there, he has been robbed of all profits. He hasn't made a dime off this goddamn movie because of that one little slip-up. It's criminal. It's sad.
Yeah.
Especially when you have Walking Dead and all these franchises based around what George Romero...
Oh man, it's
so don't make a horror movie and then openly rip off the true master of horror in your movie.
But now you're getting into this weird area that, like, all right, say he did copyright Night of the Living Dead, all of a sudden nobody can make a zombie movie after that. It's kind of like the asshole who copyrights Happy Birthday. Suddenly nobody can sing Happy Birthday anymore.
I understand that. I'm just saying, whenever I see...
I mean, Walking Dead Night of the Living Dead.
Whenever I see an indie horror film use Night of the Living Dead in their horror film because it's free...
I mean, if you're going to go for the source material, you need to pay the source material.
I just see it as a big, hey, it's free...
I can
finger to a true master of horror, and I'm not saying that these guys, these Astron 6 guys, bitch about the struggles of the modern filmmaker. I'm not targeting them, and it's just a general.
I can understand that, but
it gets under my skin.
But there's like a
couldn't someone he could still pick it up and say he did create it. He could technically go back and so I'm sure there's a legal way to do it.
But then
after that, he would have to sit there, and it's just a matter of litigation.
Yeah.
Anytime someone show it, you slap them with the thing, saying, "Hey, I don't show it again."
I don't know. I just know this has been going on and on, dude. Night of the Living Dead appears in more films.
Yeah, I was about to say it kind of sucks. Like in this scenario, when you're quoting the original source material and you're not paying for it, but at the same time, I'm also. It's kind of weird because like the way the software patent companies work, to where basically like you can draw a circle on a piece of paper and say that's my disk wheel. Therefore, everything that even remotely operates like an iPad, you know, can't.
If it even remotely looks, it's a circle. That's just like ours. You can't do that.
Yeah.
Well, how many other shapes are there?
Exactly.
I guess I can't do my touch square.
Discussions weren't happening in 1968.
No.
The guy put all his company's money into making this. He had an advertising company.
Yeah.
And they put all their money into making this money.
Oh, wow. That sounds similar.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. No. It did.
Maybe you could put some money into something. All right. Well, that end of rant. Sorry.
No.
Every time I see it pop up, I just kind of.
That's a legitimate rant.
But again, I'm not targeting.
Use the actual photos from it.
I'm not targeting these guys. I'm just like, you know what? Don't be a dick and rip off George one more time. You got filmmaking friends. Say, hey, go out with your cell phone camera and get two minutes of footage of a chick running in the woods.
Yeah.
Or something, and we'll show that.
How do you know that they didn't reach out to Romero and say, look, we want to use this. Do you want something for it?
Because it wasn't even a siege scene. It didn't even tie into the siege of the hospital we're in.
It doesn't need to be. You guys are so familiar with that shit. The moment that you see Night of the Living Dead, you recognize it.
I did, and I didn't appreciate it.
Because, see, I did not.
But I dusted it off my shoulder, and I moved on.
No, you didn't.
I just
spent like the last 10 minutes ranting.
I said rant over. That means I'm done with it.
Just wait 5 minutes. He'll be back on it.
5 minutes. I'm going to do it right now. Here's what.
Talk to me
about the cigar and the beer.
Man, I am still getting the tea sweetness. I've got the cedar going on, but it's not like a spicy cedar. It's nice, woodsy.
I don't think there is a such thing as a spicy cedar.
Yeah,
I think you're getting a little spice off the Mexican wrapper. But
very subtle.
Very subtle spice. But man, that cedar and that cream and that tea. Man, I'm liking it. And the beer, for me, is becoming much more enjoyable since starting smoking.
Here's what's interesting is that I would order this at the pub. It wouldn't be a go-to beer for me. This pairing makes the beer actually pretty. I'm like, why wouldn't I order this all the time at a pub?
Oh, no. Dude, my enjoyment of the beer has skyrocketed since lighting the cigar. I would drink this beer for breakfast.
Cody! Beer guy.
Yes.
Beer thoughts?
How do you like the beer? Are you getting the
oatmeal? All right, dynamite drop in, Cody.
It is fantastic.
Are you getting the oatmeal?
I'm just getting started, you know. All right, let me start talking really quick. We're going to be all blah, 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 blah.
You got a big award tonight. You're still riding on that.
No. I like the beer. It is thick. I'm going to be honest about that. I mean, as he pointed out earlier, when you pour it, it's black.
Motor oil black.
Yeah. I mean, you look at Guinness. Guinness at least has a little bit of light coming through. This is as
black
dark as
earth.
Black blood of the earth. And for myself, I like it. I like the coffee. I like that bitterness. I mean, it's on point.
Man, as an IPA guy, I love the bitterness. The coffee was too much, but man, that cigar is squelching it. It's putting a wet blanket on that beer. Just give me what I need from the beer. But, man.
But I think maybe, you know, as you said, this is what the guy recommended to pair with it. So he knew maybe that, you know, anything else, the cigar wasn't going to go. It wasn't going to taste
not,
right.
You would not want to do this cigar with a
don't do IPA it with a lager
or lager. I actually think it's a really good pairing. Yeah.
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 And I like the fact that it's just a freaking imperial stout. It's not like, oh, what you need to get is a 21-year-age Dominican rum soaked in banana leaves.
I drank that out in the car earlier, by the way.
Oh. Well. Huh? Gee, thanks for sharing.
That's called Mad Dog Republic.
That's called under my truck seat waiting in the carpool line at school booze. I didn't say it out loud, did I?
You did. You totally did.
Well, just you guys heard me, right? Oh, God. Oh, God. Really good pairing. In that it makes the beer, to me, better. And the beer really just is along for the ride with the cigar. Because the cigar has a lot going on by itself. So, let's come back to it here in a little bit. Well, James, the young guy that ran out of the farmhouse, is awake now and freaking out in his hospital bed. The elderly Dr. Powell injects him with a sedative, but he explains to Officer Carter that their resources are limited here since the fire, as everything has been packed up for their upcoming relocation. Yet, did you guys see any sign of a fire anywhere in this hospital?
No, no.
They're relocating the entire hospital.
You know, they did show
Some plastic sheets. You'll see this later.
Yeah. But yes, they do show, when you see the outside of the building, you see like some plastic off on the side. But where
it is later. It's not at this point.
No, it's not. Because I'm looking around, like, because they keep talking about this fire, and I'm like, everything looks really fine here. Like,
yeah.
They're shutting down this ginormous...
Oh, I mean, it'd be different if he said, you know, after that fire in the east wing, like, you know, that's over there.
Yeah. I would have liked that line.
Oh.
You should be writing scripts.
Well, you know, they, once again, they did the best they could with the funds available.
I understand.
They left out the east wing.
I understand. I would like that east wing line.
We need to trim 2 seconds off this.
The medical...
This will explain everything. The east wing. No, get rid of it.
The medical staff also discovers needle tracks on James's arm, which freaks out Carter, the cop. He fucking bled on me! And he runs out. He's got some blood on it. It spooks him.
I think that's fine.
Rant alert number two.
Oh, God.
Remember when there was a time when film characters could express themselves without dropping F-bombs every 10 seconds?
What the fuck do you mean?
Before Pulp Fiction?
I'll tell you what I fucking mean. And you listen up too, fuckhead.
Actually, it was before Reservoir.
I can't fucking do this now. I'm sorry.
This cop cusses so much.
Yeah.
He does. It's such a decorum breaker as a cop. Look, man, at your core, you're playing a police officer. Police officers don't, when they're interacting with this many members of the community...
Yeah, but
drop F bombs.
But
so
it's
much.
Not like the. But it's
well,
not
maybe
like
he's
this
trying
guy
to
is...
channel like he's. I'm Officer McClane.
But it,
fuck
but it,
this shit,
yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker!
No, but it's not like
everything has like my goddamn pen leaked.
But it's not like
any goddamn
he's,
fucking coffee.
Like,
in this
I
place.
Tore my jacket.
But it's not like he's like a professional among strangers. It's his ex-wife. It's her father.
It's an elderly doctor and a grandpa there. He's dropping F-bombs around everybody.
Elderly doctor is his wife's father. I mean...
It's not his wife's father.
Huh? Yeah, it is.
What
is
it?
No.
Yeah. It's his father-in-law.
No.
What?
That's his father-in-law.
You made that up. That's,
no, I...
It doesn't exist.
I didn't.
They never say that in the
Dr.
movie.
Dr. Powell is the father-in-law.
Never said that anywhere in the movie.
I know it's the father-in-law.
Where did this happen?
That's a huge like thing you're saying that it doesn't it's not
Let
true.
Me just get my
fake news. Fake news.
Let me just get my script out over here and look it through it.
No, that
it
is. That's not true.
No, it is.
Is it?
Listen, I heard it somewhere in there.
Listen, Spicer. You can say shit. It doesn't make it true. No, it's an elderly doctor who's not related to anybody there.
He's related to the chick.
Which chick?
His ex-wife. No. The cop's ex-wife.
They
talk about losing the child. It's
yes, because he was the doctor on staff that worked. Dude, this is like derailing the podcast.
Dude,
he's not her father at all.
We did see
her. His daughter died.
It's his father.
Oh God, this is gonna be. This has Golden Monkey written all over it.
Golden Monkey,
drink more.
Sing up.
This will help get the train back on the rails.
Little hand rising.
But there's an elderly guy with his pregnant young girl, and this cop is just dropping. If I was in a situation where, you know, there's elderly people here, and it's like the one cop there is like, fuck.
You need to be a little bit professional.
Fuck. I mean, you're already unshaven and have greasy, long hipster hair. You can at least, like, not cuss every 10 seconds.
Well, yeah.
John Carpenter made movies with heroes that didn't cuss.
This is true.
How many F-bombs did Tom Atkins drop in Halloween 3 or The Fog? None.
All right, we can't all be John Carpenter.
I'm just saying, it just turns me off. It kind of
does. You know...
Dude, you guys know me.
But
as a podcaster and as a friend, nobody cusses more than me.
Well, maybe me.
Well, but you know, I think it would have been...
I cuss ad nauseum.
I think it would have been much better if you...
I'm not offended by it. I just
didn't establish the character. Like when he's sitting, because they, you know, he gets woken up. He's basically asleep in his patrol car, and he gets that call in, and he didn't just immediate. If he just like, what the fuck?
What the fuck?
I love cussing. I love to cuss personally.
But I agree with you.
It's cathartic. But this character did not need to do that. He shouldn't have done that. He's an authority figure. He's a cop. It pulled me out of it.
I don't know.
Agreed?
Nah.
I think, you know, if they had started off with that, and then where he's in front of people, he's not doing it, but as, quote-unquote, as shit hits the fan, he starts doing it again.
I think it's a poor choice as an actor, or as a writer, and as a director, you should be watching and be like, you know what, this is our one central authority figure, like maybe... He's throwing around F-bombs, whipping around his long hair, which a cop wouldn't have. Let's make a believable character out of here. This guy is, he doesn't look like a cop, now he's not talking like a cop. Let's try to make it.
But I think that might be something towards the writers.
It all falls on the director.
And that goes to
my next point. Mix in with this cop's performance, the piss poor wooden local community theater acting of the nurse, the Asian nurse, Kim. The old grandpa is horrible.
It's not good.
I don't care how cool your special effects are or how synth-tastic and 80s your soundtrack is. If you have wooden bullshit acting in that, all that money is wasted because all I see is bad
acting.
Their
money was spent primarily on their effects and the two actors to whom I can actually say that.
Get your characters under control and get it done fast. Because I don't care what else you got going for
you.
It will crumble underneath you. Get your characters and your acting solid. That is your core. Everything else can be substandard if that shit rocks.
Yeah.
If you lose your actors, if you have these piss poor performances, get that shit under control as a director, or else you're going to lose everything else.
I didn't mind.
We said it with Devil's Candy. If you can't scare if you don't care.
True.
All I saw when I saw this old grandpa and this Asian nurse, and to a certain extent, some characters we're going to be introduced to in a minute, bad acting.
Yeah. And I agree.
This man no longer cares. Get him a drink.
I agree, especially.
I don't care. Give me a drink.
I wasn't that put off by the old man. The Asian nurse, totally. I was just like, God, that's bad.
That old man was pure local theater, man.
The actual cop himself, I liked him. In terms of acting and delivery, I do wish that they would have written him better, written his dialogue better, and told him to, you know, look like a fucking cop.
Well,
but I thought that his actual delivery and performance wasn't bad.
Well, and this isn't jumping ahead. I'm going to throw this out there. Several people make references to his dad was a cop, and he's trying to live up to his image. We never really go anywhere with that,
right?
But if that's true, that he's trying to. His dad was some amazing peacekeeper.
Then I guarantee you he would have a mustache.
He would shave a mustache. Shave.
With the mustache.
There would still be those mirrored shades.
On his badge.
And the walkie-talkie on the sleeve.
And
visible,
he might
always
not lose his fucking shit and cuss every 10 seconds when he's trying to calm other people
or,
down.
But I think that's
or he
also
would at least put on the facade that he's got control.
Well, I think that, once again, if we're going from that aspect, then yeah, he is a complete fuck-up.
I just don't want
to do anything. Right.
Yeah, but that plays into what
it
the
does
movie
play
is
into
doing.
It. I don't want us to see us get into an age of genre film though. Excuse me, where the hero cop is some swooped-haired, scruffy, hipster who can't handle shit and just kind of lucks his way into.
Yeah, but at the same time, you have to call a spade a spade. I mean, if it's bad acting, let's fucking point it out. I mean, that's what we do.
I see a lot of it in this movie, boys.
What I thought would really remedy this movie and make this movie something special, I thought the acting, which that's on the directors. They let that performance get through the funnel. They let that performance get through the final edit. They didn't stop it. And it's one of my few criticisms of this. Well, we join Carter and his ex, Allison, as he tries to scrub the kid's blood off his uniform as she brings him a cup of coffee with his favorite mug, which she won in the divorce. She says he can't get it back.
The PD mug. Why would she have that? Why would she want that in
world's
the divorce?
World's best cop mug?
The world's best. If it's on a mug, it's got to be true.
Dude, Blown Away taught us. You don't get those mugs just getting them.
Why would she fight in the divorce for that mug?
I really was just waiting for him to just make that reference. Like, you know, why did you have to take the ice trays?
Yeah, exactly. What sadistic
kind of bitch takes the ice trays?
Sadistic bitch. But I will say this: I like the actress.
I have no problems with Allison. This movie is saved by every time there's a piss poor performance, there's a real actor to swoop in and actually do the job. And Allison is there more than not to do that job. She's great.
I agree.
Of course, I didn't make a note of her name or any of her previous, but she's really good. The ex-wife. You really get the sense that she's doing her best to play nice with her ex. You know, he's awkward and it's kind of fresh, but she's really trying to be nice and kind of coexist in this intense situation.
I didn't think it was coexist. I thought she was trying to get back together.
She was very kind of...
Well, you know, he did make that reference in there where he's like, you know, they're talking about the money.
Why
he's
are
like,
you trying
know,
to be nice?
He's like, you're being nice.
Yeah.
Like...
They had a bad divorce, and she's being nice.
And now all of a sudden, here she comes again.
Yeah, she's like, I missed you. And it's like, hey, you know what? These are actually real emotions that are... I believed all this because of her.
I thought the interplay between the two of them, I would have liked to see him go, fuck you. You know, you broke my heart.
Well, we'd learn later why that
happened.
Why it happened. Well, she leaves, and Doc Powell steps in. The old doctor to tell Carter that it'll be a while before James will be in any condition to talk. He's sedated. He also advises Carter to go easy on his ex-wife, Allison.
Because that's his daughter?
She's still... No. Tut, drop that. It's not her daughter at all. That never is said. I watched this movie 3 times. Trust me, that doesn't exist. She's still emotionally dealing with losing their child during labor at that very hospital, and he needs to be sensitive to that. So now we've gotten a little bit insight on the divorce. They lost a child during labor there, and that is going to come into play a lot later. And no wonder he didn't want to come back to this hospital, because he was begging that dispatch, like, any other hospitals, like...
Anything.
His ex-wife anything. Works there, and
can
that's
you call
where his daughter
and,
died.
Well,
there's another hospital four like, counties over. Perfect. That's the one.
Can you call ahead and have my ex-wife take a coffee break? Please. Just... I do not want to see her. It makes perfect sense why I didn't want to go through it. Also, Dr. Powell says that he went through a similar situation when he lost his daughter, Sarah. He was a total mess afterwards.
That was Allison's sister.
No, it wasn't. You gotta stop. You're really derailing. Fake news! And it's a mess when you lose your child, but it takes time and you'll get through it. Well, Officer Carter roams the hallways after this. of the hospital, where he comes across the sound of a woman whimpering from one of the patient rooms. Remember that young dude that Nurse Kim was reading the textbooks to?
Yeah.
Well, Nurse Beverly is hovering over him now, digging a pair of surgical scissors deep into his eye sockets. Like, digging.
Yeah. He's dead.
Killing his ass. She turns around to face Carter, telling him, "This isn't my face. What you're seeing, it's not my face." She has peeled all the skin off her face. Very reminiscent of John Carpenter's Prince of Darkness. And indeed, it appears all the skin has been stripped from her face, leaving only exposed bright red tissue. She makes a move with the scissors towards Carter, and he reluctantly, it happens so fast, he pulls his gun and just shoots her right in the head.
That's why you should always carry a gun.
We're not going to get into that, Tuck. We don't have enough time for this tonight. We cannot do this.
Okay.
And he actually did what you wanted him to do.
He shot her.
Yeah, he shot her. The medical staff rushes in the room, and Carter bolts to the restroom, kind of dizzy because he just killed Beverly, his friend, assumingly, and he just blows chunks in the sink. Cody's foul.
Hey, we've all done it. Let's not say
not
we haven't.
Proud of it. It's hard to get the chunks down the drain.
Not say we haven't.
We've all done it. We've all done it.
Anyone who says they haven't done it, liar.
Well, while he's in the bathroom, we see our first glimpses of another world. He kind of blacks out.
Some roiling clouds.
Giant, dark, odd-patterned, swirling clouds shaped like triangles. Endless rocky terrain. Close-ups of bright red tissue, like human tissue, contracting and being ripped apart. We also see an astral kind of figure up in the stars.
Yeah.
Dark, starry night, kind of this astral figure kind of floating by. Very weird, wacky stuff that Agent Carter or Officer Carter is seeing in his passed out moment. All of a sudden, Carter pops up from the floor. He had passed out, and Allison and the doctor are helping him up. They think he had a seizure, but he's not having any of that. He's ready to keep going. And all of a sudden, they tell him that a state police officer, Mitchell, has shown up.
This is what I was really liking.
You know you're in trouble when you wake up and the state trooper's already there. He makes it clear. This guy's a no-nonsense dude. Carter, give me your pistol. There's a shooting. I need to take your gun.
And this one I have to jump in on.
I know him from one place. I didn't IMDb him. I just knew him from one place. Where did you know him from?
Art Hindle. Is his name.
Okay.
And one of my favoritest movies, Porky's.
Oh, he's the sheriff.
He's the sheriff.
Oh, dude, good call.
As soon as I saw him, I was like, oh, my God.
I knew him as the doctor in the 1978 Invasion of the Body Snatchers with Donald Sutherland.
He also did a lot of things. He was in, he did a lot of 80s TV. Airwolf. Scarecrow and Mrs. King.
He did Cronenberg's The Brood, the Canadian horror film.
Right, right.
The father, I think.
But yes.
Dude, he's the Porky sheriff.
Yes.
That punches out the motorcycle racist dad.
Yeah.
Good call, man.
As soon as I saw him, I was like, oh my God, it's him.
Well, he confiscates Carter's pistol, and he says, you know what, I'm in charge now. He came to pick up James because they found a bloodbath about 20 miles away. Lots of dead bodies, lots of blood, and he thinks James is responsible.
That's the dude who ran out of the house.
Yes. The druggie who's now handcuffed in the hospital room. He also looks at Carter and tells him, you know what? Your dead cop dad wouldn't be pleased either with the shit show I'm looking at. It's kind of harsh, right?
It's very harsh.
Well,
it's extremely over-the-top
harsh. It does accentuate that everybody knows everybody.
But at the same time,
but once again, it's like...
Oh, you just killed one of your old friends? Your dad would be very disappointed in you. He would.
But, yeah, come on.
I mean, you know, and it would have been one of those things that he would have been like, you know, let's go look. Let's go look at her.
Well...
You tell me what you would have done.
Carter asks...
Exactly.
Yeah,
have you seen her fucking face?
look in the Tuttle rule of how to do things. I shot her in the face. She was weird, I shot her. That's what Tuttle says to do in a situation like this.
Strange chick with no face coming at you with a scalpel?
Well,
shoot her.
Well, Carter asks, like, hey, can I at least call it in? It was my kill. Can I call it in? He's like, sure, do that. So he tries to get a phone line out of the hospital, and it's all busy signals.
Why didn't he do his walkie-talkie?
And there's a little subtle thing in here that I did love. As he's walking through the hospital trying to get to a phone, you start to hear it in the background. It's a little static.
Yeah, the radios go, because they're listening to country music on the radio, and everything goes static.
But you think it's the music. You think it's the soundtrack. It's leading to something. But no. He gets up to the phone, and there's the radio right there, and he's like,
he kills the static. That is one of several times in this movie I've been confused on what is actually supposed to be heard by the characters and what is sound design.
Yeah,
I'm going to get to that in a minute. Because there's a lot of stuff I'm like, oh, that's the music. That's the soundtrack. No. That's actually what they were hearing.
What the characters were hearing.
It confused me a little bit. Good point, though, with the radio. But he cannot get a signal. So he's like, you know what? He radios Mitchell. He's like, on his thing. He's like, I'm going to go out to the car and phone this in from the cruiser. Well, the
car... I'm sorry. Those CBs are tied into the phone, the cruiser. Why can't he just phone it in from his shoulder-mounted CB?
Well, the car radio isn't working either, but our hero has bigger problems as he hits the lights and he sees a figure dressed in a white robe and a white hood standing stoically off in the distance in front of his cruiser.
With a black triangle.
It's a Klan robe with
a
triangle.
It's a Klan robe with a black triangle over the eyes of the hood. But much more crisp and starched than the Klan. Klans were always kind of clumsy and kind of the hood would kind of lean over. This was very uniform.
Was.
Tut's like, no, I think the Klan presented themselves very professionally. And,
I'm just saying they had wives and they ironed their sheets.
Well, Carter, being Carter, yells, what the fuck are you doing?
What are you doing, man?
Because that's what
he is now true to character.
As a cop, that's what you would do. What the fuck are you doing? No, a cop would say, excuse me.
Sir, please take your hood off.
Please take your hood off. Step over to the thing.
A cop would unbolt.
He doesn't have a gun.
There's a shotgun in the car. Oh,
there's a shotgun in the car. The dude would have gone. He's in his cruiser.
If he was awesome McLean cop, he would have reached under his chair and pulled out that extra 9mm.
Or
stuck
gone,
it back in his
or
holster.
Gone to the truck, well, got his shotgun, and say, sir, can you step over here?
Well, being hipster cop, Aaron's like, what the fuck are you doing? To which, I love this. The electricity immediately goes out in the parking lot and in the hospital.
And you hear some sort of like horn in the distance.
A horn, which I thought was sound design. I thought that was the soundtrack I'm hearing. We'll learn later that horn is actually a real horn that's sounding, but we don't know that now. All of a sudden, the figure charges at him, pinning him down the ground. He digs a large Rambo knife into his chest. I love the physicality of the figure in the robe.
Yeah.
The way he marched, or she, whoever. Just that, it reminded me of the original Halloween, how John Carpenter told the shape to move. Very mechanical, but it wasn't like he ran. It's just a really cool, scary, pouncing motion.
Movement with purpose.
Movement with purpose.
Intent.
And intent. Good job, boys. As Carter finally kicks him off him, the knife's digging.
Yeah, he had stabbed him at least a good, like, two inches
into his chest. He kicks him off of him. He looks up and he sees there's at least a dozen other more robe figures standing around, and he races back inside the hospital.
Should have gotten that shotgun.
Should have gotten in his car and just started driving around.
Well,
hold him down.
Speaking of back inside, we cut to the room inside. Remember Nurse Beverly, the one that face was gone and was doing. Her face has now completely been removed, and we see tentacles.
Very thing.
Thing-esque. John Carpenter's the thing-esque.
It's like one of those, that little, like, that yard thing with the little water spouts. Those things are just waving everywhere.
Yes. Shooting out of her fucking face.
Cthulhu.
Well, no, this is all very Lovecraft, the old, the ancient ones.
Yeah.
And we cut to that, and then we immediately jump back in. Well, Carter has more trippy, otherworldly hallucinations as he lies unconscious on the ER floor. Dr. Pell tells Allison, you know, he's been stabbed in the chest. Dr. Pell tells Allison he's lost a lot of blood, but just like that, blood everywhere. Carter rises to his feet, and all of a sudden he's good again.
Like, good.
Let's go. I got this.
I'm sorry. That knife that was just like 2 inches deep in your chest. Oh, that's cool.
I'm okay. I swear, I'm okay. It's just,
well, I mean, I'm sure if he like stitched him up, he gave him like some painkillers and whatnot. Local. He's not feeling it yet.
He's not feeling it. So they hear a commotion coming from James's room. So Mitchell and Carter go to investigate. In the room, James is screaming for help. He's handcuffed to the bed, as we know. And behind him, what was once Nurse Bev is now a giant, hideous creature with slithering tentacles covered in slime. She's roaring in a beastly, guttural kind of roar. Just a huge fucking monster. Mitchell fires some useless bullets from his pistol at Bev as Carter kicks the bed rail loose to get James out of there. They quickly slam the door shut on the Bev monster and they race out to the lobby.
It's good. The door's closed.
They don't try to lock it or even shove like a gurney in front of it. All right,
she's
the
in door's there. Closed. It's
no,
good.
It's in there. They race back out into the ER where Carter quickly smashes his elbow into the emergency glass to get his hands on a fire axe.
Whoa. That's what the doctor said.
Yeah, whoa, hey. Did you see what... You didn't see what I saw. He tells Mitchell, we're going to go get those cars now. We're getting out of here. Robe figures or not, anything's better than being in here with that fucking thing. But before they can do anything, the father and the son, remember them from the opening scene? They burst into the ER, guns first, and immediately set their sights on James. They want him dead. The little guy from the opening scene. So he grabs Maggie, the pregnant girl, and holds a scalpel to her neck as a human shield. Very intense Mexican standoff here. Everybody's saying, don't shoot, don't shoot. What the fuck? Nobody knows who these guys are, what's going on. Dr. Powell gets in the middle of it, tries to calm down James. Nobody's going to hurt you. Just give over the scalpel. All of a sudden, he jams that fucking scalpel right into Dr. Powell's jugular vein. Arterial spray all over the place. He drops dead. Yak boy, did I use that term right? Arterial spray?
You did indeed.
Well, old Grandpa Ben, remember him? Maggie's grandpa? He's had enough. Nobody's watching him. He just clocks out James, punches him, knocks his ass out. Suddenly, the Nurse Bev monster, who's growing astronomically, opens the ER doors, and her tentacles come out and grab State Patrolman Mitchell and drag him back with her. Carter chases after it, but it throws him aside as it digs its... got these real spiky arms that comes out of its body and goes right into Mitchell's eye holes and like his scalp. Very creepy. And it also seemingly grows another brain out of the top of its head.
Yeah.
Like, the top of its head grows out, and this huge brain grows out. The lights are flashing constantly, the fluorescent lights, so it's hard to get a real glimpse of what's happening.
Yeah.
But it's bad, and it's creepy, and it's real. It's not CGI. It's not bullshit.
It's all practical.
And that was my only complaint with a lot of the scenes going forward after
the lighting.
This. The lighting.
Yeah. A lot of it is done so dark, you know, because John Carpenter always liked to show his creature work off.
Well, now, I wouldn't mind it having been being dark, but I just didn't like the fact that they're doing like these loose lights and they're swinging and it's creating this strobe effect.
It's hard to see what's going on.
And I was like, I would rather it just have been like a low light with like a, you know, because they kept trying to like
it
go
was
back
a,
and forth in this
it,
scene
it was
between
a,
these characters.
It was a definite choice to show minimal amounts of this creature, but it was frustrating as a viewer, you know, just show me the goddamn thing. Show me what we're dealing with here. Especially when you're not
faking it. You've created this creature.
Yeah. There's two worlds at play here. One, you're trying to minimize the visibility of your prosthetics, but you're also trying to create chaos with your lighting. And I think they went a little bit overboard. They were like, it's a hectic scene. Everybody's like, what the fuck? So let's do some lighting choices that kind of mimic what the fuck. That's where your swinging lights come in. That's where your strobe effects come in, to where it kind of disorients the viewer to where we don't know what's going on. I think they just went a little bit too overboard.
I agree. excuse me. The father and the son then come around the corner and proceed to bludgeon the monster over and over again with fire axes.
Yeah, because the pistol bullets to it didn't
do nothing.
Work. So let's give it some fire.
So we just see blood flying everywhere. Whenever they hit it, there's big globs of white pus shooting out of its body. You know, they just wound after wound, they just create till eventually it collapses. By the time the nurse bed monster's dead, it's just a big fucking mess. Like,
yeah.
Horrible mess. It's a good thing they're moving out of this facility. Can you imagine they try to stay there? back out in the... I love that creature. I wish that the lighting situation had been handled differently to where we would have seen it more cleanly. But
when I think that would have, you know, in most instances you always do, because like, you know, when you first see it in the hospital room, it's dark, it's in the corner.
And that's okay. This was an opportunity to bring it out into the light. You spent so much time making this real creature.
I really think
see
that
what
it
you
was,
got.
I
show
really,
it to you. No, really I give it that. All the creatures in the thing, John Carpenter's thing, you saw.
At some point, you know, he works into it, and all of a sudden you see it.
In total
see,
light.
I think that they actually did play a little bit too much into it's chaotic, let's do some lighting choices to emphasize the chaos, because later on in the movie, they don't shy away from showing you the
creatures.
No, they
don't, but here and later, I went into this movie hearing so much of, even the doctor, when I said we were doing this movie, he's like, I'll be curious what you said, I heard it was very John Carpenter-esque, I heard there's a lot of Carpenter. This movie is shot nothing like a John Carpenter movie. It's scored nothing like a John Carpenter
movie. There's the montage of the lone hallway, the outside of the hospital.
Those things are so minimal.
Yeah, but that's still,
this movie,
I mean, that's like a
this
that's
movie
a Carpenter
is shot,
staple.
This movie as a whole is shot nothing like a John Carpenter film. It's scored nothing like a John Carpenter film.
Well, I think,
film.
Like I said, they said there's hints.
But
like,
there's
obviously
hints.
The beginning
it's,
scene.
Everybody's influenced by things. You can't help but be influenced by things. I don't see this as a John Carpenter jerk off session at all.
No.
It's not.
I think there's many hints.
But you can't say that
through many movies.
Yeah.
But the you know you, and you mentioned it earlier that this is a is more Lovecraftian.
Yeah.
It's more In the Mouth of Madness
right.
than any other.
But at the same
Carpenter
time,
film.
I mean, you can't say that it's not Carpenter influence because the influences are visible.
No.
I'm sorry. When it sees the long, lonely hallway, it cuts to the outside of the hospital. Those are quintessential Carpenter montages.
No, those tiny moments are, but their use of a frenetic camera, a fast-paced, shaky camera,
right.
Their use of these streaking lights to downplay.
Yeah, that's not Carpenter
this,
at all. Yeah.
These monumental creature scenes are shot nothing like Carpenter would do. So, you know, I think these people that are like, you know, this is a John Carpenter. No, it's not.
No.
There are visual.
The guest did it way better.
There are visual tips of the hat to the creatures created in The Thing and In the Mouth of Madness.
Yeah,
but these guys are filming it from a completely
aesthetic
much different than Carpenter.
Cinematography-wise, aside from the environmental montage, yeah, it's totally not Carpenter, but there still is some Carpenter undertones because, like, even with Nurse Betty or whatever
Beverly.
Her name is, you know, there are still times to where you're seeing the thing. You're seeing the thing.
Well, we've seen the thing with the tentacles,
right?
Yeah,
right.
You're seeing Prince of Darkness in the stripped off face,
right? I mean, there's definitely
but
some nods,
but
there.
They're not shooting them like the thing.
No. This movie is not an homage to Carpenter.
It's not. It's really not.
I think it's an homage to a lot of different horror movies.
Oh, it is. I mean, you've got. I'm going to get into that later. Well, let's keep moving. Back out in the ER, the father is ready to burn the fucking place down and kill everyone.
All right, I'm going to go ahead before we even get to there. I hate the father. This guy is such a one-trick pony.
Is TNCC anti-father?
I dislike him, but he's not a good actor. After you see what's going on, he pretty much knows how to deal with this shit.
No, he doesn't. And I'll get into this later.
No, I'm going to get into it right here in 1 minute. Give me 1 minute.
First of all, his performance in this movie was bad.
As Carter begs, like I said, the father's ready to wipe everybody out. The son kind of, they pressure the son, like, please talk some sense into the father. And he's like, he can't talk. Show him. And the son pulls down his shirt to reveal his throat's been pulled out. He's got a big band and he's not talking to anybody. He's a mute.
I kind of like the son.
It's only after Allison, Carter's ex-wife, convinces the father that they know absolutely nothing about what's going on here. They're just innocent hospital workers, that he kind of lets off the gas a little bit. At this point, I can't tell if the father is just another lousy actor in this thing to join the grandpa, the Asian chick, or maybe he's a decent actor who's just made some horrible character choices and the director went for it.
Yeah.
It's the downfall of this movie, man. Bad acting.
I think so, man.
If you had good acting, if you had Drunk Dad as that character,
Drunk Dad would have nailed it.
Nailed it.
Well, you had two known working actors, Art Hindle and the doctor.
Which if you blew all your money on that doctor, money well spent. He's great.
Yeah.
But my God, man, you can find actors and spend some time with them as a director and get them not to suck.
I think they were...
Take 10 minutes away from your prosthetics, you know, and you're 10 minutes away from your creatures.
Everything in the film...
And make these guys good actors.
As far as I have learned thus far, I mean, every actor is Canadian.
Oh, they're all... Yeah, they're all Canadian.
So they purposely went out to find Canadian actors.
But well, that's all they... I mean, it's an Ontario production. They're all using local talent. But here's the thing. I will give the father this. I, unlike the grandpa and unlike the nurse, I couldn't decide if he's a bad actor or if he just made choices that were bad and the directors let him get away with it because they were concentrating on other stuff. I think that's the case.
I think it was a mix of bad acting, bad choices, and bad writing. I won't get into it right now. The dude was just so over the top of, I know everything that's going on. I know what's going on. I'm going to solve this problem right now.
Which we'll learn. He actually doesn't know anything.
He doesn't know anything.
Anything.
He's wanting to kill the junkie.
But how many guys do we know like that here in Central Texas? I know everything about everything. They don't know anything.
It made no sense.
No, it didn't.
This dude is ready to wipe out a hospital.
It's a choice.
This guy's ready to wipe out a hospital because he's authoritarian. He knows what's going on. And then when you find out that he doesn't, you're kind of like, what the fuck? This makes no sense at all.
It didn't work for me. Real quick, you just finished your cigar?
Yeah, I did.
Fan?
Big thumbs up. I'm going to say that's my favorite cigar that we've done this year.
Cody, you're halfway through.
Yeah.
You're a slow smoker. What are you feeling?
It's been good.
But
since I've been now about halfway, I haven't really felt like I've had much transition.
I have had the cedar, the tea, the cream.
There's not a lot of transition to it.
Fairly steady. That's not necessarily a bad thing. No, it's not a slam. I have got in this last third, as you can see, the burn line has remained ridiculously sick. I mean, straight across.
Straight on.
The draw has been great. Construction, top notch. I'm getting in this last third a little bit of chocolate. With that spice and that cedar and that tea,
I mean, I will say, like, right now, I mean, this thing is almost to my palate is just pure chocolate.
Really? So you're getting the chocolate too?
Oh, yeah. Wow. Oh, yeah.
See, I missed out on the chocolate.
Yeah. Well, you smoke too fast. You smoke slower.
It's just, I mean, and to me, that's phenomenal. I like it. Yeah. But like I said, it hasn't I mean, it's been slow. It's just, it hasn't transitioned. I mean, right now it's chocolate, but I was getting chocolate earlier, but now it's all chocolate.
Okay. See, that's what's funny.
I run the gamut of tea, cream, cedar, chocolate.
I didn't taste any.
See, that's what's funny is that I know you guys like the transition. And to me, I don't demand transition in a cigar. If you can hit my palate note and stay constant, I'm cool with that. And this cigar did that.
Well, here's what I think is cool. The pairing is working beautifully. This cigar is, like I said, released in August, ideally, for a limited run till they sell out.
Yeah.
The beer is a limited run, October to January.
Really?
Okay. So you buy the cigar in August, you let it sit for a little bit in your humidor. Then October, when this beer comes up, they kind of coincide. It's a good mix that way.
Yeah.
You're done, so I'm going to bring up MSRP. When these come up in August, what do you want to pay for this thing?
$9.
I want to pay.
I'm going on 2 hours almost with the Robusta.
I want to pay $7 for every cigar I ever smoked.
I know, but you loved it. You said you loved it. Best cigar you smoked all
but
year.
But it had a shaggy foot. That's what it's called, right? A shaggy foot.
Yeah, okay, good.
What'd you say?
$9.
I'd love to pay $11.
I swear to God, if he goes 901.
I'd probably play.
What would you pay and be like, this is a good price for this?
$12.50,
$11.
No.
This is my favorite part. When these come up in August, you want to know what the price is on these things? $5.50.
What the fuck?
All right. I might have to get some more.
$5.50
for this?
I had to clarify that with Riste. Are you, really? $5.50.
Are you shitting me?
$5.50. Best cigar you smoked this year is $5.50.
Is that $5.50 maybe in another currency?
Macedonian Cougarans or whatever they.
Holy shit, man.
Oh, it's $28. I'm so sorry.
20 sheep casings. I don't know what they...
Because I still think that pound for pound, the Olivia, the Kane F550, which is usually anywhere between $570 to... They have, but they're still... I mean, even if you're paying, like, you know, in Austin, you're paying around the $6.
The Intemperance line is always around $7. Dude, $5.50 for one of these bud boys.
Yeah.
Stay tuned.
That's nice.
Follow Risty on Facebook. When these guys go up on sale on Facebook.
In August.
$5.50.
$5. Shoot me a text when that happens.
$5.50.
Shoot me a text because I won't remember any of this.
I don't know if it's my favorite cigar of the year so far, but it's definitely the best deal of the year so far.
Oh, fuck yeah. Dude, $5.50. Come on.
I thought you'd shit over that.
It's got a bunch of Laotian boys rolling this up, and I mean, come on. You get the price.
Can we get through one podcast without bringing up oiled up Laotian boys?
I don't know. Ask Cody.
Why would I know anything about that? I mean,
well, Maggie, remember the pregnant Maggie? I'm going to move on from Laotian boys. Or as the father has affectionately nicknamed her, the teenage slut. They're like, hey, we gotta go out there and stop these robe figures. Like, who's gonna do it? Grandpa or that teenage slut?
You don't know her.
Hey, he's hardcore. He's already like punched a bunch of people out. That's
what I'm saying. He's so over the fucking top, male aggressive.
Well,
male dominant monkey motherfucker.
Maggie is having contractions now, so Allison wants to go down to the pharmacy and get some much needed drugs to help her out. Carter makes her swear to wait for him. He knows that she's extra motivated to help Maggie because they lost their own baby.
Yep.
But he insists she wait until he, the father, and the son go out to get his shotgun out. They're going to need more bullets to get through the night. And they let's go out. We're going to go out to my patrol car and get my shotgun. Wait for me. Promise me you'll wait for me. As soon as Carter leaves to get his gun, Allison breaks her promise and goes straight to the pharmacy. I'm guessing that's why he divorced her. She's a promise-breaking tramp, right?
Oh, you vow-breaking hoe.
She promised him 2 minutes ago, and now she's already marching back there.
Till death do us part.
Oh, wait.
Well, as she goes to the pharmacy and starts grabbing the meds she needs to deliver Maggie's baby off the shelf, we rack focus to see the deceased, supposedly Dr. Powell, standing behind her in the shadows. While the men are outside trying to get the shotgun, he has a ridiculously hard time getting the shotgun out of his cruiser.
First of all, it's...
It has moved. It has moved. It's not as close to where he parked to the hospital. It has moved out.
And I don't understand this at all.
The loud horn...
The robed figures have pushed the car away.
Well, that loud horn sounds again. First time it played, I thought it was part of the sound design. I didn't think the characters could hear it. I thought it was part of the soundtrack of the movie. But the father tells us that horn is actually bringing these robed figures from miles away to congregate here. Because every time you see these robed figures, there's more of them.
There's more of them, yeah.
So that's actually something that's playing in the movie, this horn. Not sound design. That, I got confused there. The robed figures attack once again. Just as Carter finally gets his shotgun free. As one of the figures tries to stab the father, Carter finally gets shotgun and shoots one of the rope figures, blasts his ass.
I just don't understand the whole moving of the car.
Because...
They wanted to get away to make the scene.
Okay.
So is the car moving or the hospital?
Well, they run their way... Well, they run, the three guys, the father, the son, and Carter, run back
into
the hospital.
I'm sorry, I just keep waiting for you to say the Holy Ghost.
I know, I'm going to say it at one point. It was so hard for me as I was typing this up. Just the father, the son, and Carter.
Wait, is Carter the Holy Ghost?
Well, Carter...
I'm so confused.
I'm terrible.
Is that what he's supposed to be? So much referencing to other material.
Carter and the father then go looking for Allison. Because she broke her promise and went off on her own. But she's nowhere to be found. On their way back to the ER with the bag full of meds, they did find the bag full of meds that she got for Maggie. They hear a phone ringing, because remember, the phones are dead. They hear a phone ringing from Dr. Powell's office. The call is coming from the morgue. It shows up at the morgue. And a very so Daniel picks up the phone.
I'm out.
I'm in.
Phone call from the morgue.
Oh, of course. You don't answer that. Of course. Well, Daniel answers it in a very crisp, cold voice. We hear, "Hello, Daniel." It's the doctor's voice. Not our doctor. Dr. Powell. That would be crazy if it was our doctor. We haven't seen him in a while. Like, what's he doing there?
All right. First of all, phone call from the morgue. Oh, wait. It's a dead guy on the other line. I'm out.
We saw blood spraying out of his neck.
They covered him in a sheet, for God's sakes. Yeah. That means he's dead.
By the law, I got to inform you, by the laws of movie making, if you put a white sheet over a man, he's dead.
When you're dealing with the occult, the white sheet is just a temporary boundary.
Here's what Dog Pal says in a very calm, clear voice. He has a great voice. They did cast a great voice actor.
Yes.
Daniel, you saw something when you woke up earlier. What was it? I can show you more of it if you like. I'm sure it's hard for you to understand. It was hard for Beverly as well, but I assure you my intentions are altruistic. Remember that night when you brought in Allison, the child inside of her clawing to get out? Losing my daughter changed me, but I'm doing what I have to do to make it right. You'll understand soon enough. After Powell then also throws in some shots about Carter's dead cop dad. Everybody keeps bringing up this dad. I don't know where that's going. They never go anywhere with it, like how he died or what. They're just like,
I know you're trying
Your
to...
Your father would be disappointed in you.
It's not drunk dad, it's cop dad.
It's cop dad. But I know you're trying your best to be your dad, but you're not doing it. You suck.
You're not good.
So. Okay, I get it. I suck. Stop bringing it up.
Well, Daniel asks...
Let me live my life.
Daniel demands to know where his ex-wife Allison is, to which the doctor says, "Don't worry, Daniel. I'm going to help her. I'm going to help all of you." While Carter's on the phone with the doctor, the father is digging through the doctor's desk. He finds all these Polaroids of people in white robes with triangle faces, sacrifice, dead bodies piled up, the black triangle mm-hmm. painted on various things. The doctor took a lot of Polaroids of stuff, apparently.
And just leaves them in his desk.
No, they're in a little metal box.
He leaves unlocked.
That he leaves unlocked on his desk. Well, Carter gives Grandpa Ben a pistol. "Hope you know how to work this. You're on your own." And he prepares to head down to the basement to rescue Allison. The army of rogue figures has grown outside. There's like 50 of these guys outside now. At one point, somebody says... You know, they're trying to get in here, and I think it's the father says, no, they're there to keep us from getting out. But first, Carter, the father, and the son, and the Holy Ghost interrogate James. They're like, "I don't know what's going on, the fuck's going on here, but I know somebody who might." So they get James, the little meth head, and they, hold on, with the help of a ball peen hammer, see just how much he knows. Yak Boy? Ball peen hammer, is that right?
Ball peen. Actually, it is a claw hammer.
A claw hammer. What's a ball peen hammer?
Ball peen hammer is for working metal. Claw hammer, obviously, has the
big
hook
claw.
On the
big.
Back for pulling nails.
A big claw.
Ball peen has your normal hammer end, but on the back is a rounded for actually hammering metal.
Okay.
I'm just saying that with the father, who apparently is eradicating anybody associated with this evil, because like he knows what the fuck's going on, like this evil is spreading, right. So he's got to eradicate anybody who has a touch on this thing. All of a sudden, he doesn't know what's going on. I mean, he was about to kill the junkie dude. I thought was to keep something from
spreading.
Dude,
he is so dead set against killing this guy. But I think it's because he thinks that he killed all these people. He thinks the bloodlust is on his hands. He's misguided there.
I don't know.
That's why he shot the girl, and he thought these meth heads were behind this whole slaughter. Yeah.
Okay, that makes a little more sense.
I think so. Well, in fear of getting his fingers smashed up against, you know, they're threatening to break all his fingers. James tells him that the doctor's behind it all, to which the sheriff's like, or Carter's like, "We already know that. Tell us something we don't know."
I will say that this scene works on a lot of different levels. You got the mute boy who's, you know,
he's into it. Like, I'm going to smash the fuck out of this dude's hand.
I like the son. The actor who plays the son who doesn't have any speaking roles.
Mute Matt Damon?
I actually like mute Matt Damon. To me, he was interesting.
I wish Matt Damon was mute in more of his movies.
Easy. Matt Damon is a national treasure.
He's something.
National treasure.
Treasure.
Burden. White man's burden, Lloyd. White man's burden. Well,
they continue to carry him on, but they're dead inside. They're dead inside.
He tells him the doctor's buying it all. He was looking to score some meth when he came across this girl who's like, "Hey, I can take you to this pill house and get you some meth." Turns out it wasn't a pill house. It was this farmhouse where they found him at. And the robed ones were there, and they were slaughtering everybody who came in there. But not before they forced James to have sex in front of them while the doctor watched.
Sure about that.
Ritual sacrifice. All sorts of weird shit. But here's the thing. As he's saying this, the cop, Carter, is like, "Hey, I grew up with Dr. Powell. My family had potluck dinners with him. He's not. That's not our guy. You just got a phone call from him in the office, asshole, saying that he was. That made no sense. Yeah, that was a continuity fuck up. You just talked to the doctor, and he's crazy coming back from the dead, and you're defending him to this kid. I didn't buy that at all.
And this is where it starts to fall off the rails for Tuttle.
But basically, ritual sacrifice, forced sex exhibitions, dead bodies everywhere. Reminded me of some of my old house parties back at Sam Houston State University, to be honest with you. So the four of them now head down to the basement. Carter, the father, the son.
Meanwhile, they're trying to calm the fucking Asian chick on the
Asian nurse chick is just, she doesn't know what to, she just can't believe she got this assignment. She wanted to go to the hospital 20 miles down the road where things are normal.
You're a fucking nurse and you've got this patient delivering a baby and you're telling her in front of her face, I don't want to be here. I shouldn't have been there.
No, I shouldn't be here. I hate you. I hate this.
It's bad writing. It's bad acting.
I didn't mind that motivation. It kind of came across as a entitled kind of young.
It was so over
the
top.
Dante
it was
from
bad.
Clerks. I shouldn't even be here today.
Yeah, but it was so over the top. Nobody's going to react that way. I mean, even if you are the most entitled piece of shit out there, you're not going to react that way.
Here's my character motivation question. The father was so hardcore up to this point. He shot the young girl in the back. He punched Allison across the ER when she got in his way. He didn't give a hot shit about anybody else's survival except him and the son.
Right.
All of a sudden, why the hell is he going down the basement to rescue Allison? For a guy who's openly proclaimed he ain't helping anybody but himself, he's suddenly in the mood to help.
Yeah,
it makes no sense.
Why would he go to the hospital in the first place?
I thought he was hunting down James.
I thought he was hunting down James, yeah.
That's who he wants to kill, James.
But that's my point. He's out for himself. Why go out all that trouble? Why? Okay.
True. Well, I mean, I think it was just kind of like a demon hunter at this point.
Well, yeah, but I mean, when he's coming into the hospital, when they first get there to the hospital, there's all those white-robed figures. There's at least 10 of them out there.
Yeah, and he's like, nobody's leaving here.
But here's my point.
We fought our way in here.
Why did you fight your way in here?
But my point is, if he was killing everybody left and right, why did he not kill the white-robed figures?
Yeah, no doubt.
He had a rifle.
Yeah, with limited bullets.
Doesn't matter.
But still.
He's got a kid with an axe. They're raring to go.
He was ready to kill everybody.
I get the sense from him. We'll learn this later. His family was killed, and he blames James because he thinks James was behind the slaughter at the farmhouse. That's why he shot the girl, and he wants to shoot James. He thinks they're behind. This. He doesn't know what's going on, but he knows they were there at the farmhouse. His family's dead. I think he's just all about killing James. But that's why I don't understand this motivation. Like, okay, you know what? I won't be an asshole.
He got a hold of James. He could have killed him right then.
I know. But now he's like, all of a sudden, he's like, all right, you know what? I'll use all the powers I have and go help you get Allison.
Well,
makes no sense.
James did name the doctor as the culprit, and the doctor's down there, so he's got to go kill the doctor.
But at the same time,
I don't know why he didn't just, like, shoot James out.
To me, it's even more simple. If you were determined enough to walk into a hospital and kill everybody there when you first opened that door, you would have killed all those white robe motherfuckers out there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Or at least tried to.
Yeah.
Well, as they go down the basement, they discover a set of corridors where the morgue should be, and then a mysterious set of stairs going down even deeper.
I'm out.
On the walkie-talkie, they're talking to Kim, and she's trying to guide them down there, and they're describing stairs and things that she's like, I've been down there a million times. What you guys are describing doesn't exist. You guys are describing stairwells and corridors. My job takes me down there every day. That doesn't.
I actually thought this was a pretty good scene.
I did too. As they go down there, though, the father grabs James and puts him in the front. You're leading the charge. Now he's the human shield. Sweet irony. He used Maggie as a human shield earlier. Now you're the human shield, asshole. We cut to a dark operating room all of a sudden down below where Dr. Powell, with his back turned towards us, tells Allison that as she regains consciousness on the operating table that they are in uncharted territory here. He's operating on himself, seemingly, stitching his own wounds for the first time. Although it looks more like he's removing skin from himself. He is. Which we'll learn later he is. It's hard to tell, though, with his back turned towards us. When she asks how he could be back from the dead, he explains that when his daughter Sarah died, he was destroyed. He was totally wrecked. So he went looking for a solution. And Allison would be surprised at the things you find when you go looking. As Asian nurse in training Kim desperately tries to calm Maggie down upstairs by clumsily injecting her with some sedative, she doesn't use an alcohol swab. She drops the needle on the dirty ground. That's got to be good for the baby. Pumps her full of just some mysterious amount of sedative. The guys discover weird patterns drawn all over the basement of this place. Circles, triangles. I'm sorry, the sub-basement. There's a basement below the basement. The father says that they saw similar drawings all over the farmhouse that they found full of dead bodies. He said it looked as if someone had committed surgery on all the bodies when they found them and then dumped them in a big pile. Carter sees a blue triangle painted on a door and somehow knows, inherently, after a brief moment where he once again sees some visions, that they need to go in that door with the blue triangle. So you're checked out at this point?
No, not quite yet.
Okay, let me know when.
You know where I'm checking out.
We cut back to the doctor in the room telling Allison that he knows what happens now when we die. You come back as something else, like a caterpillar turning into a moth. His experiments haven't been successful when it comes to this coming back process, as our human bodies weren't made to... they weren't made for this. And he admits that he's made some mistakes along the way with his experiments.
He's a reanimator.
And he says his back's still turned to us, which really works because I think you and me are on the same. His voice is perfect for this. It's all about his voice. Some of these mistakes he's made are still living down here in the sub-basement. In fact, they caused the fire in the hospital because they wanted to die, but he won't let them die. He tells Allison not to cry. He's going to help her because he's going to end the cycle of life and death. Why does she want to be a part of a world where her unborn child got strangled by the umbilical cord on the way out of her womb? She's obviously torn up, crying at the memory of her stillborn son.
Strapped in the gurney.
The futility of man is over, the doc says. I finally figured it out. And then he says this, Jim. I lost my daughter to the abyss, but tonight I'm calling her back. Please don't do this, she pleads, but he tells her that it's already been done. He finally turns facing us, and as he walks over to the operating table, the skin has been completely peeled off his face like Nurse Bev. This is very reminiscent of Hellraiser 2.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
When the guy...
And that's exactly what I thought. Like, a lot of the imagery...
The stuff that's coming up
is very Hellraiser.
Very Hellraiser. Very Hellraiser. Even his voice mannerisms are very Doug Bradley as Hellraiser.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, very stoic English kind of...
Right.
You know, you would think a demon, but it's very cultured. It's very,
very
slow.
Cultured.
It's very...
Just like Pinhead.
Just like Bane. Yes, I'm going to resurrect the dead here.
But mainly Pinhead. I mean, he had that clear, distinct...
It was a total Pinhead. Well, even with the abominations that are coming.
Dr. Powell pulls the sheet off of Allison's body on the table, and we see that she now has a giant pregnancy belly, and it's pulsating, moving around. Something inside her is kicking up a storm.
It's fucked up.
Yeah, it is.
It is totally fucked up.
Or perhaps she ate the fajita omelet from Jim's Diner the night before.
That place has been closed for 10 years. Oh,
I guess we'll know soon enough.
It's fucked up. It was a creepy scene. I actually like this part. I was just kind of like, all right, that's fucked up.
I talked about my experience with the fajita omelet at Jim's Diner on a past episode.
Did ad nauseum, because that's exactly what it caused.
It caused me months of ad nauseum. And that's why Jim's is no longer a establishment in Central Texas. That was before Yelp, by the way. That closed down on its own. It imploded on its own weight. It didn't need Yelp. It didn't need...
I'm fairly certain Jim's had a sub-basement.
I think it did.
This isn't the way to the bathroom.
Wait, wait on the fajita omelet. Could I try the shrimp cocktail? You're going to need to go down to the sub-basement for that. Well, as Maggie goes into labor pains upstairs, her gang of guys stumbles into a slaughterhouse downstairs of severed limbs, hanging torsos off chains.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Bodies everywhere. There's one figure bashing his skull up against a spike on the wall. He finally pulls it off. A camera goes through his head. You see a hole there. And when they cut across to him, it's a featureless face, just tissue and slime hanging off. And then the shit hits the fan in a very big way.
Pause. The creature banging his head against the spike, I really liked. And especially I like the pull away and then the camera showing through the head to the other actors. I like that.
This, and
now
this is
once
where,
you get past this, I'm out.
When shit goes crazy?
I'm out.
It goes, and this is where there. This is where it actually reminded me of an older movie, also inspired by Lovecraft. I had to go back and look it up. It was called The Resurrected. Early 90s. I had Chris Sarandon.
Okay.
For those might be familiar with the name, he played Prince Humperdinck in The Princess Bride.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But,
I've never seen this.
And it went by another name, or had another name attached to it, Shatterbrain.
Oh, yes. Now we're on the same page.
Yes.
It was Shatterbrain.
Yeah.
You totally need to watch Princess Bride. Come on.
No, but this one, in effect, was almost... And this is what it was like. You know, all of a sudden when I saw this stuff, I was like, oh my God. This is The Resurrected. This is Shatterbrain.
Yeah.
And I was like, my God.
It's also very reminiscent of the Italian horror of the early 80s, Lucio Fulci. Just bizarre man-beasts.
Right.
Half zombies, half... That don't resemble anything like man at this point. All sorts of half-human, half-monster creatures begin slowly...
See, I was thinking more... I was still on the Hellraiser scenes. You know, the dude with the... Shooting the CDs out of his skull.
Yeah,
just these weird abomination type things.
These are all of Dr. Powell's mistakes that he talked about. I thought they all looked fantastic. No CGI...
No, it was 100%
practical. 100% practical effects.
I will say I liked practical effects, real world effects. I liked that. But I was just like, once it reached this point, I'm like, man, they're in their own fashion, they're just really retreading over the Lovecraftian tropes from other movies.
Yeah, I mean, the ancient ones, these are his created. He's been down there experimenting with these creatures for possibly years.
But, I mean, this was the whole point of Shatterbrain was that he was trying to do resurrection and ended up creating all these...
Abominations.
Twisted, malformed people.
Well, the father looks around and very aptly says, "We are in hell."
Yeah.
I mean, it's a great line.
Point. No. In this context, it absolutely worked. I will say that at this point in the movie, I'm like, all right, this isn't my cup of tea. I'm checking out.
Well, then you've checked out for good because it only ratchets
the insanity up from here.
The son begins to blast the monsters with his rifle. Pus and blood splatter everywhere. There's one really crazy motherfucker that starts walking on its hands.
Yeah.
Upside down.
It was like Sister Abigail from WWE.
And it's, yeah, very much so. And its body contorts to where its head's upside down.
What was it like, the Haunting in Connecticut that it showed the chick that was walking?
Well, it's also like
that.
In the original Exorcist, the spider.
The spider walk down
the spider
stairs.
Walk.
Right, right.
But it's just jaw-dropping that it's done practically.
Practical.
Right.
And I will say, I respect the fucking shit out of that.
This is the type of stuff, I don't know if you guys saw the Silent Hill movie.
No.
This is the kind of stuff, if Silent Hill had used these kind of practical effects, it could have been a great horror film. Or at least a memorable one. But they chose to do all these similar things, CGI, and what could have been, you know, it was a huge budget horror movie.
I was about to say, Silent Hill had like five or six spinoffs.
It could have been
a phenomenal
horror movie, but they chose to do this kind of stuff, CGI.
Yeah.
It looked like a bad video game.
Yeah.
It wasn't a video game. But it played like a video game. You're watching a bad CGI rendition of video game. If they had done their effects like this, I'm sorry, that creature contorting and its body in that kind of sausage casing just twisting and turning.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, that's money, man. That looks so good. I loved it. I love the practical effects in this.
Yeah.
Well, that contorting monster then starts chasing Carter, and he wisely feeds the whiny meth head James to it. Because James jumps on his back, like, give me your gun, I gotta get out of here. He's like, ah, fuck this. He just throws it right into the mouth of that thing crawling around. What did Dog the Bounty Hunter call meth heads?
Ice heads.
Take this, ice head. That's why Hollywood will not let Matt Cade make movies. I would have totally cast the father and the son as Dog the Bounty Hunter and his son Leland, but had them play themselves. Like they were chasing a bond jumper, and they just happened to stumble into this hospital.
Trust me, Dog would have been cool with that casting.
Dude, they have nothing but those tear gas guns that they have. Come on, Icehead.
All of a sudden, his wife shows up. Dude, what the hell are you doing?
I would have totally cast them in this. It would have been so much better. Tell me that would have been better. Dog instead of the father and the son.
It would have made more sense.
They show up with their spray cans of mace.
That's all they've got. We got these mace cans. It's got the feathers and all that. Come on. It would have been awesome. Again, that's why I'm not allowed to make movies. Well, meanwhile, upstairs, a crying Kim has her textbook open to the chapter on C-sections, which is a pregnant woman. You never want to see that next to you. The nurse looking it up in a book. She's got her scalpel pressed up to Maggie's giant belly, but she just can't do it. She can't make the incision. There's a sound of glass crashing from the front entrance. The robed figures are now entering the hospital. Grandpa Ben stands guard by the door as he pleads and begs for Kim, please deliver that baby. You're our only hope. You've got to deliver that baby. Kim is losing it. Asian nurse in training just can't handle the pressure. By the way, Asian nurse in training who can't handle the pressure is a script that I wrote, but it was about something totally different. Do you guys want to make that movie?
No. Fair I'm enough. On board for Asian nurse in training, but Asian nurse in training who can't handle the pressure? No.
Cody, you're on the fence. We'll talk.
Maybe.
Your last third of your... We've all cast Scar real quick. You're on the last third. Are you still getting a lot of the same flavors?
Yes. At this point, it's just chocolate.
Man, I'm a fan. I'm a big fan. When August comes around, I'll be...
I'll be plugging down some cash on it.
Not if I buy them all.
I'll definitely get some more.
Okay. So, beer and cigar, thumbs up all the way around. I'm going to have thumbs up on the beer because of the cigar. The cigar really tamed the beer down for me. I'm smoking a Connecticut now. I just want to go opposite direction from the Mexican San Andreas wrapper. Let's smoke a Connecticut. See, dude, then I lit up the Connecticut. All the coffee just
came back,
and no, it needs that cigar to whip it into submission.
I actually went with the Intemperance Envy, and you know the coffee. It's not like the Connecticut.
I would think that would play nice.
It's actually playing really nice with it as well. I agree with you. I think I like the beer because of the cigar. It does tame that coffee down.
I agree. Good pairing.
which I guess makes sense since the guy who made the cigar told us to pair it with.
Well, Maggie cannot, back to the movie, Maggie cannot slice into this belly. Suddenly, as she refuses to put the knife into Maggie's belly, a knife shoots through the back of Grandpa Ben's throat out the front, just kills his ass, blood everywhere. He drops.
Yeah, it splatters on Asian nurse in training.
Asian nurse in training, yeah. Kim. And he drops, and behind him, who killed him? We see his granddaughter, a smiling Maggie. She tells Kim to relax because everything's about to change. Dr. Powell's an amazing man, and she's honored to be carrying his baby. Dr. P getting some action.
I totally missed that. I thought it was the old man.
The grandpa?
The grandpa. Well, at this point, I've kind of checked out of the movie. I'm kind of just halfway paying attention to it.
No.
It was very important that you knew that Dr. Powell was
impregnated. I'm done with this movie.
Well, that's I think that's really unfair at this point. You've gotten several plot points completely wrong.
This one is.
Well, back down.
You totally just screwed up a lot of this.
You're really misunderstanding a lot of this movie. It's not a complicated movie. Well, back down in hell in the sub basement, and this is a bit confusing. The father is now hallucinating that he's back in his home, and he finds his family dead. And when the son approaches him, he begins choking the son on the floor. He pins his shotgun against his neck. He's like, "This is all your fault." He blames him for everything that's happening. We've never really been given any insight into the father-son relationship. I actually didn't think they were a father and son. I thought the father found this kid, because at one point he says, like, "I found him and everybody was dead."
Yeah.
I don't think they're actually, they're credited as the father and the son. I don't think it's actually his son.
Really, yeah.
But this scene just is totally confusing. I don't know what's going on.
I don't know anything that's going on in this movie now.
But you know what? It's supposed to be like a hellish nightmare scenario. They're not really obviously at his house. It's just a fever dream, a hallucination.
Sure. And
I don't know what is going on here. I'd like to, but this scene kind of lost me.
Yeah, I was like,
this scene lost.
They haven't done any of this.
They haven't done any of this, like transporting to an alternative dream world.
Yeah,
and it lost me.
And so I was just like, I don't know why they made this choice all of a sudden now. It would have been different. Like, if they started trying to, like, shoot the deformed people, and they were having, like, visions.
This just came out of nowhere, and it completely was misplaced, and I didn't like it at all. Because I didn't understand it.
I mean, obviously, it feels...
It made the relationship between father and son even more confusing than it was anyway. I didn't like it. Thumbs down. Anyways, the son fires up a road flare that he got from the Officer Carter's truck, and stabs the father as he's choking him in the side with it. Not to kill him, but just to snap him out of his dream. And as soon as he does, he curls up in the corner. He's like, "I'm so sorry." For the first time, we see him as kind of a vulnerable guy. And he... Bad move. I'm confused on what happened to him. This late in the game to start introducing those kind of things, bad call. Yeah. I don't like it either.
I'm out.
I'm not out, but I don't like it.
Right. I'm with him. I'm like, I don't know why they did it. If they did it, if they had done it in the beginning, in the middle, somewhere, other than the vision that What's-His-Face was having.
Yeah, if you're gonna,
but that was like a snippet.
If you're going to introduce the flashbacks or alternate realities, don't do it in the last 20 minutes, man. You're going to lose me. You're going to totally lose me, and I'm going to be confused, and I'm going to get angry. Which is Tut's reason, like, I'm out. I get that. I wasn't out, but I didn't like it. Well, as Kim, Asian nurse in training Kim, hides in a broom closet upstairs from the rogue figures who've now entered the hospital in full force. And I'm sorry, that white robe figure with a triangle, I'd love that.
I thought that that it's was imposing, very spooky.
It's imposing and spooky.
It was clannish. It was scary.
I told
it
you guys
cool.
this. Off, I told you guys this when we were taking a restroom break earlier. When he was out trying to originally get the radio out to the in his cruiser, and the light started dimming in the parking lot, and the electricity cut out. All my years, dude, of watching horror movies, this has never happened. The electricity in my house cut out and started flickering. And the TV I'm watching this on went dead. And I'm like, holy shit. The movie was flickering, and now I'm flickering. And then my fire alarm started beeping.
I'm out.
It was weird, man. It was really weird. I've never had that happen.
Honey, we're going to the hotel.
Well, things are about to get full-blown mind-fuckety big time.
Did they put the Asian nurse in the... Or did the Asian nurse go in the closet?
Yeah, she's in the closet at this point.
Because the white robes are like, oh, she's in the closet. It's cool now.
We can't go in that closet. It's
what the fuck?
Well, Carter finally finds Allison in the sub-basement on a surgery table. And she asks him to hold her hand as she smiles at him and tells him that she can feel it coming. And he grabs her hands. He looks down at her pregnant belly and then back up at her face, which suddenly crumbles like dry plaster of Paris in his hands. As we pop out to a wider shot, we see Allison is completely gutted open with slimy, like, sacks.
Come on, man.
Tentacles pouring out of her.
You stumble on
There's
this.
There's also green vine-like ropes extending from her body up to the ceiling. Dr. Powell's voice appears. She's finally what she always wanted to be, Daniel, a mother. Isn't she beautiful?
No.
Well, Daniel doesn't think so because he grabs that pickaxe and she looks at him and gives him the permission and he starts hacking her to pieces.
Fuck yes!
And all you see is
I'm
like...
Sorry, I'm not see his shadow. I love it.
You see a shadow through the window of a door.
Yeah, you don't see it. Like, you just see through the window with the triangle
and
door.
He's going...
He just chopping her to bits. I'm not out. I love it.
This is... Shatterbrain, the Resurrected.
Oh, I'd
this
kill
is,
her. I mean,
and so many of these.
Wife. This is Lovecraft. This is In the Mouth of Madness from Carpenter. This is, dude. That moment when he sees her and she's pregnant, and then all of a sudden her head just crumbles into that. Dude, that is Fulci at his best. That is Carpenter at his most eccentric. That is. Cinema, man. What didn't you like about it?
Man.
I loved it.
Yep.
Just not my thing.
Two against one. Well, Carter then stumbles out into the morgue where a giant illuminated triangle has appeared in the morgue. This huge lit up triangle. And a skinned alive nude Dr. Powell is surrounded by his robed figures, his disciples as he calls them. He looks like one of those anatomy dummies where you just see the tendons and the muscles.
Yeah. And this is where I'm going to say it's like it almost goes... Yeah, it's a completely different makeup job, but I mean, he's almost... It's almost pulling like almost kind of like a full skin pinhead.
Yeah, yeah.
Not pinhead. Hellraiser 2, there's a guy being harvested of his skin to feed pinhead. And it's basically a guy just... Loss of all skin is
right.
He looks like a skeletal dummy, just tendons and muscle. But he's dark and he's slimy, and he's purposely removed all of his skin to move on to the next phase.
Yeah,
it's creepy and it works. I thought so.
Yeah.
He tells Daniel that he used to resist death, but now he embraces it, and he wants Daniel to join him for his own rebirth. Where Daniel sees Powell as playing God, the doctor explains the ones he serves were way predated God. They're older than God and time itself. This is pure Lovecraft. This is In the Mouth of Madness, the ancient ones.
Cthulhu. Before, Dagon.
Before God, when the earth split open, the ancient ones that would crawl out. This is old stuff. It's been done in movies a million times. What I can't believe is as many people as call Carpenter on this film and bring up stuff. I haven't read anyone talking about In the Mouth of Madness. This is what Carpenter did with In the Mouth of Madness. A, a cr- crazy author, Sutter Kane, summoned the Ancient Ones with their tentacles coming out of their faces and their, you know, people with, you know, you'd see a beautiful woman and behind her there'd be these extremities coming out and I read 20 reviews for this film, like, I keep hearing Carpenter with this film, nobody's talking about In the Mouth of Madness. This is In the Mouth of Madness. This is Lovecraft. This is a guy summoning the Ancient Ones.
Right.
If you're going to beat God, you got to go pre-God.
Right.
And that's what he's doing. Well, suddenly a smiling Maggie pops up behind Carter and stabs him in the back with a big-ass butcher knife, sending him tumbling towards the triangle and Dr. Powell. Watch the abyss open to me, Powell says, as he kneels down in front of the triangle and begins chanting, much like the devil's candy chanting.
I actually do like this one element / detail, is that you've got this disciple / worshiper of some other power, but his ultimate motivation is, watch me control this.
No.
Nobody can
ego is in full effect.
Yeah.
With all these films, whether it's the Fulci Italian films, whether it's Prince of Darkness, whether it's Sutter Kane, and it's always an ego. I've done this. I've opened this door. There's always that central figure that wants the credit.
Yeah.
Dr. Powell's no different.
And I do like that.
I do too. You got to have the madman. You got to have the crazy madman in this.
Yes.
I've written tons of scripts that hinge on the insane madman who is pulling the strings to everything. This guy, in a movie like this, you got a guy who pulls the strings. He doesn't know what the fuck he's actually done. This guy started out trying to get his daughter back.
Yeah.
And here we are in hell, literally. Well, sure enough, the triangle then becomes a beacon of intense light. That triangle just starts shining this bright light as a portal to the abyss opens. Maggie looks amazed as she gazes in the light and asks the doctor to bless her baby. So he does. He walks over to her and he places his hand on her head and he asks that his daughter be reborn through this vessel. I'm sure that made her feel special. I actually grabbed my wife's head during the birth of my first daughter and said the same thing. Let my spawn be born through this vessel.
How'd that work out?
I was not invited into the delivery room on baby number two. Suddenly Maggie's belly literally erupts open. She's dead instantly. I mean, her whole body erupts open.
Yeah, I was about to say, she is just splattered.
And a giant, hideous, hairy, gooey creature emerges from her womb.
You can't even describe this creature.
It's really fucked up, and it's got a face that only a father could love.
Yeah. It's disgusting. It is absolutely
The new Sarah Powell, his daughter, makes a reappearance and starts marching towards the portal from out of nowhere. God, this creature is disgusting.
They did a fantastic job, I'll be honest.
In terms of practical effects, yes.
I was looking at it like, fuck no.
Well, do you think there's that moment Dr. Powell's like,
I've made it.
Well, I guess those trips to the Cold Stone Creamery are out of the question. All these things I wanted to do with my daughter are, I can't take this thing anywhere.
Wait a second. What have I done?
Isn't she beautiful?
Dude. No. We're still going to Six Flags this summer. Sarah, I can't.
I can't.
I wanted him to like lean back toward like, hey, old god, you could have made her a little thinner maybe, you know.
Maybe without the tentacles and the giant fangs, and
I was expecting her to look a little more like me, just no skin.
That little portal on her forehead that shoots out acid at her enemies. I don't remember Sarah having that. You fuckheads. Yeah, no, she's bad news. Well, just then the father and the son burst in with their guns blasting.
Guns a blasting. There's a trend there.
Well, Sarah chases them into an adjoining room where she traps the father underneath her with her tentacles and her spikes.
I'm sorry, man. Even he's got to be like, this is a bad move.
What did I... They should have had that moment with him at the portal, like, what have I done?
My choices.
Oh, right. My actions.
But he follows through. Take some of that. You know, you got a couple open wounds. We need to get some alcohol on that. Get those things disinfected.
Well, she traps the father underneath her. He knows he's a goner. So he pulls out a thing of lighter fluid, squirts it all over him and her, and tells his son, hey, throw one of those road flares on us. Mute Matt Damon is like, he's mute. He can't talk. Or
we get that.
So he gets a road flare, throws it on them, and torches both of them. They both go up in smoke. Then we go back in front of the triangle portal. The doctor is starting to dissipate into smaller pieces of matter. He's onto something here. I can see it all before me. The infinite astral workings. It's beautiful, he says. Carter crawls over to him, the large knife still firmly in his back that Maggie shoved in there.
This is incredibly painful, by the way.
He looks over at... the doctor looks at Carter. I can give you back Allison. That's what you want, and you shall have it. All you have to do is let go. Carter gets to his feet and crashes a fire... He's got his fire axe. And he crashes it, smacks it down to the region right between the doctor's head and the neck. This is where I wish the doctor was here. Is that between your head and your shoulders? Is that the neck region?
Collarbone.
Clavicle.
Collarbone.
Clavicle.
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 It does nothing.
Yeah. And I will say I do like the imagery of the scenes after that, where he's got this axe just hanging out of his shoulder.
And he's still talking calmly.
He's just like,
it
hey,
does,
what
it doesn't
up?
Matter anything.
What are you doing?
I would think you'd know by now my body is just dead. I have sacrificed myself.
I've peeled all the skin off my body. Your axe.
This isn't the end, Daniel, he says. To which Daniel, in his best hero gravelly voice, says, yes, it is. So he lunges up and grabs the doctor, and they go shoot through the porthole, through the triangle. As soon as they go through it, immediately it goes from a bright light to black, and then the triangle completely disappears, and the morgue is completely silent like it never happened.
Right.
I don't understand.
Elsewhere, meanwhile, in the sub-basement, Sarah Powell, remember her, the giant beastly...
whatever this thing is.
Is back in action. She's a bit crispy now because she got set on fire. But she's
a couple of dates like this. It's just like, oh.
Thanks, Match.com. Well, my dad is a doctor. I like that. Pay for the wedding.
The one?
I died years ago.
What was this? Picture from 20 years ago? Come on.
This is not you, Sarah. This is not you. You said nothing about tentacles. You said nothing about your vagina having teeth. I don't think we ever saw the vagina. Thank God.
No, I think we did. We might not have recognized it, but
she's chasing mute Matt Damon, the son, through a series of tunnels until he's suddenly kicked out. He's like spit out of the tunnels into a hospital.
Well, it's like the walls are
closing in on him. And then it spits him out into the hallway of a hospital. And he looks behind him, and there's not even a tunnel there.
No, it's like a wall.
It's like he imagined it.
Yeah, it's like a wall.
There's no sign that he was ever in.
And once again, that's very much like Hellraiser.
Very Hellraiser, very Lucci or Fulci. I'm going to get to the Fulci connection later, but yeah, it makes no sense.
I was waiting for him to undo his Rubik's Cube.
You wait for him to look at that wall in the Blaine Predator voice. What the fuck?
What the fuck?
What the but he can't talk.
What the fuck? Well, at least he can mouth the words. He should know the words.
What the fuck? That would have been funny.
What the fuck?
What the fuck?
That's bad.
You did it first.
I know.
You should be ashamed of yourself.
I am.
I am disgusted.
He's not really mute. He's an actor. It's mute Matt Damon. God love him. Well, Matt Damon didn't... he goes around the hospital and he finds all sorts of dead bodies everywhere. He's just looking everywhere. There's dead bodies. Including, did you see the one guy in a white lab coat with no head?
No.
As he's looking around the dead bodies, there's a guy in, there's a body in a white lab coat with no head. Who's that? I never saw that happen.
I'm checked out.
I'm thinking that might have been a deleted scene that we never saw, or a doctor that we never saw.
Sure.
He sees a pharmacist or somebody with no head.
Sure.
Is that stereotyping? A white lab coat's a pharmacist. Well,
it could be anybody that works in a hospital.
He finally discovers Asian nurse in training Kim in a broom closet. Is it over? She runs out, to which he hugs her and nods. A lot of nodding in his future.
It don't work.
Did he still do it? That's all he's going to do for the rest of his life is nod.
It's okay. No. I have a close friend that's deaf. I'm allowed to do this.
Oh, okay. No. In that case, I don't think you're allowed to do that.
No, you're not. He'd whip my ass.
No.
He'd whip your speaking ass.
The son is going to learn some sign language, and everyone's going to ask him, he's going to, what happened? He's going to just basically sign for, that was some fucked up shit.
How do I sign insanity?
That is just fucked up.
I mean,
how do you...
The guy peeled his skin off. A guy peeled my dad with a crazy tentacle beast.
Well, we still don't know if... I don't think that was his dad. I don't think the father was...
No, that was his dad because he was like, I blame you for... Well, it says the father
and the son.
Yeah, he was like, I blame you for mom's death.
Nothing in the movie gave us that, though. IMDb calls him the father and son. He said at one point, I found him and everyone else was dead around. I rescued him. I never got that they were actually father and son.
I did.
He treated him like a son.
He did treat him like a son.
I did. Yeah, I thought they were.
Why weren't you there to solve the problems that I couldn't solve? You failed me at every instance.
You let your mom die.
Well, he's certainly speaking like a father.
I'm sorry. Sorry, Dad.
We're terrible.
Yes.
It's terrible.
We are.
We just offended deaf people.
Well, they're not... I doubt they listen to many podcasts.
We're just... Hey, we're in a hole.
Now,
stop digging.
To help our hearing-assisted listeners, Garrett Morris. He can't... All right, sorry.
I totally want to run for city council. No, I can't.
No, you couldn't 50 episodes ago. You're screwed. Well, we cut to then the rise. First of all, did it piss you guys off that the only ones to survive this shit are the horrible Asian nurse who was chicken shit and wouldn't help anybody, and Mute Matt Damon?
I like Mute Matt Damon. I thought Mute Matt Damon...
It's always the last one you expect.
I loved him. He's great.
I actually thought Mute Matt Damon was one of the more interesting characters of the entire deal.
I will give him this. He acted more with just his facial expressions than all these others acted with all their faculties.
Exactly.
Grandpa Ben's horrible.
Horrible.
Father's horrible.
Asian Kim was
Asian
horrible.
Asian nurse in training Kim was horrible.
There were so many horrible actors in here. I actually like Matt Damon from an actor standpoint.
You just said, Ben earlier said, you're our only hope. Old Ben saying you're our only hope?
A little Star Wars reference.
Right there.
No, that guy was no Kenobi.
It was no
But
Kenobi.
He was still an old Ben.
He was an old Ben.
The old Ben convention.
I think it was like the old Ben Rice old Ben.
It's not good. Uncle Ben?
Uncle Ben.
No, Uncle Ben was black.
Yeah, this guy
is not. He's movie, old Ben.
Is this old movie ben. Over yet?
I wonder if he means old Ben. You mean the crazy old coot out back?
I mean the guy that's way too interested in his granddaughter's pregnancy?
I really need this movie to be over with.
What are you talking about?
And I was pretty sure that old Ben knocked up.
We haven't even gotten to the most interesting...
Dude, he thought
Old Dude. Ben knocked up the granddad or granddaughter.
That's what I thought up until when she said that she was carrying Dr. Powell's kid. I was like, that sweet old granddad knocked up his
Well, you know, it would have been more... That's how fucked up we are. Well, at least if old Ben at least had looked over at once at the granddaughter, be like, slut.
Well, he did say something at one point like, I don't want to be driving 20 miles extra every time this kid has a thing. And what if she was like, well, it's your fucking kid, Ben.
Hey.
And then mute Matt Dave's like, what?
What are you talking about?
That's when you, Matt Damon, puts on the white hood. I can't be enjoying them. That'd be horrible. That's, again, why I'm not allowed to make movies. I would have Matt Damon, you, Matt Damon, put on the hood and be like, I'm out.
Audi 5000. Peace.
It's horrible. It's terrible. He's not really deaf.
No, he's not.
He had his throat ripped out.
He
wasn't born deaf. No. I'm not going to make fun of those guys.
He can hear. He can talk.
Oh, jeez. I'm not talking for the rest of the movie.
You just talk like...
I'm not. I'm sorry.
I'm so sorry.
Our sponsors are fleeing left and right. They know what they signed up for.
Well, we cut to the rising sun in the morning. Pink clouds hovering over trees, birds singing. The world as we know it is fine once again. Until we cut to the exact fucking opposite of all that good stuff. We're suddenly back in the world of black clouds and scorched earth. Only this place looks nothing like Earth. Daniel and Allison stand together looking out into the abyss. Looking up at a giant black triangle up in the sky, surrounded by lightning and terrifying sky.
Now, and I was trying, and I went back and looked at it, because it was really hard. Because, once again, bad lighting, I don't know what it affects. But is it supposed to be a black triangle, or is it supposed to be a black pyramid?
It's pyramid.
Is it pyramid?
It's totally a pyramid.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a giant black pyramid in this new world that they're in. Stormy skies.
The void.
Lightning, the void. They're in the void. They're in hell.
They're just in another dimension.
Another dimension. So they hold hands. She's back in her scrubs and her physical form.
He's there. I actually don't like that part.
And they're...
I mean, at least he got his Allison back.
Trapped. In this new world, and there you hold hands, and then we cut. End of movie.
I kind of like that part. I mean, if I'm going to be in hell.
But, you know, like
Stranger Danger there. We're
going to
hold hands.
It's not hell. And I mean, it's just.
It's a different
dimension.
It's a different dimension.
Yeah.
Or maybe it was hell.
I
don't know.
I don't think it was hell. I think it was another dimension.
I don't know, with all the fucking creatures that are walking around Earth getting into this portal.
But they weren't there. It was just them and nothingness.
Where'd the doctor go?
And you know, he'd be around.
I would think so. I mean, the guy pushed.
Well, I'm thinking maybe the doctor got it wrong, misinterpreted the signals. They're now there, and they're whole. She's back to looking the way she was.
I don't know, man. I didn't get the impression they were going to, like, build a house and start a new life in this dark...
Under
the black pyramid with lightning, eternal lightning and fire. Hey, babe. This is us now.
I don't know. As soon as they had all the abominations show up, which were cool in a practical sense, but in terms of a story sense, I'm out. I
wasn't out. I love the creatures.
I don't know. I don't know what you're trying to tell me.
Well, let me break this down into influences, because that's what this movie is getting hammered with since its release, is wearing its influences on its sleeve. I can't believe, because when I told the doctor that we were doing this movie, he's like, I'll be really curious what you see. I hear it's very Carpenter-esque. Every time somebody hears that about a movie, they look to me like, what'd you think?
It's Carpenter. What do you think?
I did not find it very Carpenter-esque.
No, there was only hints.
Right.
I found visual tributes to Carpenter.
Right.
But the film was not shot like Carpenter. The film was not scored like Carpenter.
No.
Yes, there were the every time a figure would lose the skin off his face, that's a Prince of Darkness move.
Carpenter wasn't the only person who did that.
Of course not. But the gateway to a parallel plane is very Prince of Darkness. That was the whole point of Prince of Darkness, was a gateway into hell.
But like I said, he wasn't the only person to do that.
No, he wasn't. But I got that. I got, you know, there were some flourishes of the thing with the creature effect.
Right.
I didn't read this anywhere, but I saw a lot of In the Mouth of Madness.
Yeah, no, creature this was effect.
The ancient
this
ones.
Ten was the Mouth entirely of Madness was what, a Lovecraftian. Carpenter?
Yes.
All right, so obviously, if you're picking up Carpenter
and
stuff.
No, but very much like in Mouth of Madness, it was a madman, Sutter Kane, using his body as a vessel to open up our world to the world of the ancient ones.
I've been
around since before God.
Well,
before
you know,
anything.
and like I said, and people use it all the time, this is directly a Lovecraftian horror.
Right. Yeah.
To paint this though as these guys are ripping off Carpenter and that's a lazy paint of the criticism brush.
Well, like I said, you see a couple effects that remind you of the Thing. And I'm like, okay, even I pick that up, but I'm like, I would not call this Carpenter.
No, not at all.
I mean, they picked up like two or three scenes. Boom,
I would say The Guest is way more of a love letter to Carpenter than this movie ever was.
Correct.
There was some aspects of this movie that definitely were Carpenter. From, like I said, the empty hall, the environmental montage.
Well, even more than that.
The creature effects.
Ted, even more than that.
That's definitely Carpenter.
It's in its early essence, it's a siege movie. It's Assault on Precinct 13. There's these figures that went.
But Carpenter wasn't the only one who's done a siege movie.
No, he's not.
Either.
You know, the Assault on Precinct 13. Assault on Precinct 13 was basically Rio Bravo, where the bad guys were...
Right.
That's Howard Hawks. I thought these guys showed their own style.
I did,
Their own approach to music and pacing, which was very un-Carpenter-like. I also have heard a lot of criticisms about it, especially the end, when they're in this alternate...
Void
to Lucio Fulci's The Beyond, which is one of my favorite... directors, and also one of my favorite horror movies, The Beyond. For our listeners, The Beyond, an old New Orleans hotel back in the 1920s, it sits on one of the seven gateways to hell. In the 1920s, they do a ritual sacrifice of a guy there, and then we skip ahead to 1981. A young woman inherits the hotel, and all this weird shit happens, and it's still an open gateway to hell. And at the end, her and her husband go down and do this sub-basement. I don't know if it's a sub-basement, but it's a basement.
A basement.
And just like this, they enter an alternate reality, a hell. It's a vast landscape. It's their basement, but it's a vast universe of low-hanging clouds, dead, stacked bodies, this kind of rocky climate. Their eyes immediately go from blue to clear white. That's hell. I never got the impression in this movie that this alternate
was hell.
Was hell. It was something
just
different.
Void.
It was it was something different. The void, if you will. It reminded me so much the end of The Beyond. I get those comparisons. I get
well,
that.
Well, I just, you know, there's so much, you know, even with music, you have influences as a musician. To where if you really idolize a player, you're going to pick up aspects of your influences. And then it's really easy to criticize that person, like, that good dude plays just like Jimi Hendrix. Well, if you're a student of that style, that influence is going to seep into your own work. I thought that Carpenter's influence was there, but like you said, I didn't think that this was a Carpenter movie by any stretch of the means, because not only did you have the Carpenter influence, How many references did we make to Hellraiser, Hellraiser 2? You know, there are definitely other
much
IPs
more so.
Out there.
I thought these guys showed their own approach to things.
I did.
I respect that.
Like it, but, you know, I can see where they're coming from. I thought that their storytelling was just fucked up. There were so many times where I didn't understand character motivation.
Honestly, Ted,
I didn't understand what story they were trying to say.
Honestly, Ted, I was okay with the story arc. I was okay with everything that happened at the end. My biggest criticism of this film is the acting. I thought that they had...
But to me, that comes down to storytelling. What? You have a father who knows everything, and then all of a sudden is like, wait... I need you to tell me the answers to all this shit.
First of all, he came into that hospital like he knew everything, and then we finally kind of got the sense he knew nothing. And we didn't really get why he was there.
But you didn't see, like...
And where he got the son. A lot of unanswered questions.
It would have been different if he, like, busted through the hospital like, I know everything. And then once the story unfolded, he's like, oh, shit, I don't know anything. You never got that from the actor.
No, you never
got that from the portrayal.
But, you know, even when he said, like... Well, you guys aren't getting out alive, but I am. Like, he knew something. He didn't know anything.
No.
I just didn't understand
the whole dream sequence, I feel like there was some editing choices made, and they were made wrongly.
Why not show a dream sequence with the cop and his wife and the daughter lost?
If they had done something
like
that...
It came
like
out of blue.
Yeah, they showed enough flashbacks of the other people. They should have...
That's your central character.
They could have.
Or the doctor losing his girl.
Where this movie sunk with me, it didn't sink. I liked the movie.
Meh.
You liked it too.
No, he didn't. He didn't.
For what it was, it was decent.
Yeah. I thought the acting shortchanged. Man, if they had gotten better actors or directed the actors they had better. Spend as much time on the acting as you did on the creatures.
Yeah.
It's so important. And that's Carpenter. The Thing would be nothing if it weren't for Wilford Brimley and Kurt Russell and Keith David.
Yeah.
Getting those performances right is what makes the shit that happens with the creatures great.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
If those guys suck, if those guys are confused on what their motivations are and how to act scenes, those creature scenes don't mean shit. You have to be able to have a masterful grasp of your actors and your effects. That's where Carpenter rocks.
You had no
grasp on your acting. You concentrated so much on your practical effects, which were great. It's a balance, boys.
You gotta have the salesman.
Well, you know,
I kept thinking if a real actor had played that father, because that father is basically the Quint role of Jaws.
Well, so, okay, yeah. Here's a real case in point. I really feel like, you know, if they'd put the
300 men went into the sea,
Art Hindle,
men came
he should have been the father. He's got some chops.
Oh, the marshal, the
sheriff,
the state trooper,
yeah. He's got the acting chops to carry that.
He showed great chops in his little limited role. He showed some stuff.
Well, but what I'm saying is, I mean, he has been.
I'm saying get a guy to play that father who can act.
Yeah,
I think he would have been far better.
Fritz Beer.
I mean, that guy. Playing the father would have been better as
Fritz
the sheriff.
Fritz could have
because he's only in like three scenes.
Yeah,
he would have been far better. And get the other guy that has and has done horror films.
Yeah, I just didn't buy it. I mean,
he did Body Snatchers. He did The Brood.
But dude, just picture this: Dan Stevens, the guest. Picture him as the cop.
Yeah.
An actor. Who would look like a cop, act like a cop, still convey conflicted things about his ex-wife and all that, could stand his own in every acting scene.
And
get an actor of that quality as a cop. then pair him with an actor of that same quality as the father.
Honestly, I didn't object to the guy who played the cop.
Dude, he just didn't... Dude, he's got long, greasy hair, scruffy.
Outside of the physical appearance
of him. I'm sorry, dude. You're not going to be a cop looking like that.
But... Again, you know, to me, that's
he's actually right because he should have been trying to be. They kept saying you're trying to be like your dad,
your father. You should have been trying to be super cop.
Well, he should have been. He should have been neat and clean.
Neat and clean with a mustache,
and that, and all those things though about his dad went nowhere. We never learned what happened to his dad. That's why I didn't even really mention it much in my notes because we never learned. Like, did his dad die in duty? We never learned anything.
Yeah.
It was something that everyone kind of threw in his face, but we never really... It never went anywhere.
I think that's the funny thing about it is that when you distill it all down, you know, in the last... you know, you can't scare if you don't care. I didn't really care about anybody in this movie. It was the same thing with the houses that October built. You know, he had an interesting concept there, but I really didn't care about anybody that was in that movie.
I cared about Allison, the nurse and the mom. She was really good.
Kind of.
She outshined everybody in this movie, that actress.
True. I agree.
I thought, unlike Tut, I think we're in agreement, the doctor did what he was supposed to do.
Yes.
I thought his voice was why they hired him, because so much of it is in that voice.
Yeah.
I thought he was good. I thought he was really, really good.
It's calm.
Outside the doctor and Allison, I thought everyone should be recast and get a do-over. Let's remake this movie with good actors.
Honestly, I really think they should have taken the sheriff and put him as the father.
It couldn't have been any worse.
At least cast him as the grandfather.
Something.
Yeah. Or cast an Atkins-like guy as the father where, you know, he's doing a shot and like just burn out, but he's still trying to play the part.
Yeah.
In Halloween 3, he was still shaving every day. He shaved that mustache and he still showed up looking the part.
Yeah.
That's Carpenter. His guys showed up to play the part. These guys just showed up like schlubs.
Yeah, I didn't care for him. There was no emotional attachment
I agree.
To me.
So that's just touching a little bit on as much attention as this movie's gotten about its influences. I don't think it was a deal breaker for me. I thought it was, they wore their influences well and they didn't ride the coattails of Fulci or Carpenter.
But I will say this, that as much as I didn't appreciate the movie, I do appreciate that they tried, that they threw the genre out there. It's such
I love that end scene. Even if it is totally rip-off of The Beyond.
Correct.
I actually did like it.
That, you know what, they're together and they're in this weird... fuck it. That's great.
I kind of liked it.
I liked it too.
I kind of picture me and Stranger Danger sitting there.
This is our life now. Fuck it.
Where's Charles Mortimer?
Grab my hand and let's do it.
That's what we're doing.
It's going to be an eternity of misery, but we're in it together. Isn't that what marriage is?
Do they have beer here?
No!
Here's your Coors Light. One other point I want to mention. As filmmakers, we did a Kickstarter crowdfunding campaign years ago, trying to get a feature film off the ground. These guys...
It failed miserably.
It failed miserably.
Thank you, fuckers.
I think we raised about $5,000, which...
Hey, 5,000 wasn't bad.
These guys, because of their history with Astron 6 and the films they had done, they reached out because as this film was getting in pre-production, they're like, we need to get started on making our creatures.
Okay.
This movie needs to have handmade prosthetic creatures,
didn't they bring like an A-game troupe to do the creatures
effect?
Yeah,
but one of those guys is the director. He's... So they reached out on Indiegogo, which is a crowdfunding source, and to their credit, they raised over $80,000 on Indiegogo just to make the creature effects for this movie.
That's pretty decent.
I think it's admirable.
It is.
To use their fan base to... anybody that can crowdfund successfully has my thing. But, dude, they raised $80,000 to make these monsters. And, dude, I'm telling you, I watch every goddamn horror movie that comes across the radar. They look so good.
No, they their did. Practical was just... It was on point.
There was not one sliver of CGI in these things.
And I think I always appreciate that more because it always looks real.
Well, there was points where, you know, the doctor is standing in front of the triangle portal, and I can tell that's a rubber suit, but at the same time, I'm forgiving of that because it looks visceral. I mean,
he's actually up there. In that suit.
You know that that's a guy there.
Suspension of disbelief goes away with that.
His daughter is reborn in that hideous creature that we couldn't even describe because we're so grossed out. With that face and that hunchback and the tentacles.
There's something that's kind of cool about that.
Because it was real. Because they actually made this thing. And whenever they would hit it with an axe and that ooze would splash out of it, it was real flesh and ooze and...
Material.
I mean, just, and you know yeah. what? They actually got $80,000 from their fans to do it right. And that's the saving grace of this film was practical effects.
Yeah.
I have not seen practical effects done this well in a horror movie in a long time.
I think if you remove the... if you remove the practical effects from this film, it's a turd.
Like I said, Silent Hill was a huge budget, $100 million horror movie that was supposed to be the next Shining.
It still did pretty good, though.
The minute those contorted bodies, like what they did in here brilliantly, they did CGI and looked like CGI, and she went down in these sub-basements of Silent Hill, and there's all these weird contorted things that were clearly computer animated.
Yeah.
These fuckers actually made it.
I will say the backward bend creature that was just kind of weird, the Silent Hill kind of backward bend, the Sister Abigail from WWE, it looked good. It really looked good.
And it looked great. And it was creepy.
Even though that I know that that's, you know, rubber suit, practical effects, to me that looked a lot better than that Silent Hill CGI.
I agree.
The Haunting in Connecticut, where I think they did the same thing. I was just like,
I do love this new wave that we're kind of seeing of indie horror films with Deathgasm, with this.
We've got a mix with
Turbo Kid.
Where you have that mix.
You know what? We're going to do some things digital. This movie didn't.
Yeah.
But other movies were. But we're going to also do some things. Remember Turbo Kid where the guy like landed on another guy? We're going to do some shit.
The Turbo Kid, even going back to the Corman deal, the Death Race 2050 or whatever.
Whenever we're going to show
a mix of both.
We're going to show guts falling down on you.
Right.
We're going to show real blood and real guts.
Yeah.
Even Expendables couldn't do that. Every bloodshot in Expendables was digital.
Yeah.
We're like, God, man, this movie.
Even like Rambo, Rambo, when they did the where he's on the 50 cal and he's just mowing down the Laotian.
Don't you talk bad about the 50 cal scene?
No, I liked it, but even that stuff, like when the blood and guts was hitting the camera lens,
and they was not, he was not killing Laotians. They were Myanmars. You have a thing against Laotians?
No, I've had a couple of bad servants. Some bad massages.
I thought the fact that they were able to raise $80,000 through crowdsourcing was beyond admirable. But you know what? They formed this thing 10 years ago, Astron 6, and they got a following. And they made some movies. And kudos, man. Bravo, boys.
I was about to say, going through the process myself, it's a hard thing to do. So, you can't really knock them for it.
I am thumbs up on this film. I was really, and I think the doctor, when I talked to him, was expecting me to be like Carpenter ripoff. Because I shit all over It Follows because of very similar things. I thought it was trying to be clever. I never thought this movie was trying to be clever. I thought it was very straightforward. And I thought the direction was very straightforward.
Yeah.
Man, I'm... Yeah, thumbs up to The Void for me.
Thumbs down to The Void for me.
I liked it.
Boo. It worked.
2 out of 3. Ain't bad. Cigar, I think we're all three...
Three thumbs up.
I'm going to have to revisit the Zlatno Sants from earlier in the year, because that was by far my favorite of the year, that Connecticut that Riste did.
It was, yeah.
But this is right up there.
I'm saying this is 1 and 2 so far. The awesome.
Price point is ridiculous.
Holy shit, man. If you factor price point into this cigar, it's hands down the best cigar we've done.
I know that's a big thing for you.
$5.50
for tonight's cigar was amazing.
Unfucking heard of.
And it paired. By the way, I switched to a Connecticut to go with the beer.
I want to try this cigar with an actual cup of coffee. See what it actually does.
That'd actually probably be fantastic.
I think it would.
Yeah. Honestly, any cigar in the morning with a cup of coffee and no kids screaming at you would be amazing.
That's the way I kind of look at it. Any cup of coffee with a cigar and no cat, you know, meowing at me.
But you know what? I will give the beer a thumbs up. It was a little overpowering with the coffee once the cigar was done, but it paired wonderfully during the run of the cigar. So I'm going to give the Founders Breakfast Stout a thumbs up. You boys?
I like it.
I
will drink it again and again.
I'd like to drink this for breakfast with a cup of coffee.
Man, I don't know.
You're going to give all credit to the cigar.
It is thick. It is delicious.
I mean,
I'm not saying it's the ideal thing. Oh, I just had a hot day.
You guys know me. I don't like coffee stouts at all. I'm not a fan. But
I did enjoy it. I liked it.
Yeah.
With the cigar, it paired very, very nicely. I don't know what it would be like without the cigar.
And like I said...
Well, you've been drinking it with a different cigar, is it?
Yeah, I had the Intemperance Envy, and it was fine. It was no change. I was fine with it. I don't know what it would be like without Sans Cigar.
Sans
Cigar.
All right.
I've heard it both ways. Yeah.
Well, interesting movie and a good cigar. You can't beat that.
Yeah, whatever.
True. This guy.
Good cigar. Mediocre movie.
I disagree. I think we're in a cool place where some interesting movies are coming out. We saw it with Devil's Candy. We saw it with this movie.
I love the fact that we're actually getting thriller, horror elements back into this thing.
And you know what? If the three of us are willing to spend $7, somehow you got it cheaper.
Yeah, because I'm awesome.
I had one option, $7 for Amazon. Mm-hmm. But you know what? I've heard a lot about it. I want to see it. I'll pay $7. Mm-hmm.
I thought it was good. I like the fact that, you know, there's so much...
At least you're getting money unlike George Romero.
Yeah, exactly. I'm a huge comic...
By law, I have to inform you that George Romero
received... You're taking advantage of the original Masters of Horror.
I'm a huge comic book nerd.
By
and
law.
I love all the comic book love that's come out in the last, you know, 5 years. But at the same time, I'm like...
Steve Ditko gets no love.
But at the same time, I mean,
Steve
like...
Steve Ditko is the George Romero.
There's so many genres out there. There's so many stories that can be told that aren't superhero related. So I like the fact that people are, you know, bringing new stuff out there.
Dude, this
maybe it's not in my wheelhouse, but I still respect it.
There are guys making... generic zombie invasion movies. Zombies are invading this hospital and they have to find them. These guys actually came up with a backstory to these
cloaked figures in these hoods. They came up with a doctor with a world changing
god
mission,
fetish,
which I've written a, none of y'all read it, but I wrote a script with a similar thing, a doctor who was trying to change the world with a broad stroke of genetic evolution. I mean, it's doing something different, man.
And then I'm not going to totally shit on
gonna,
it because of that.
You're going to pair that with great creature effects, subpar acting. God, man, hire good actors. Don't hire fucking.
But see, that's one of the things.
An old guy at the community theater. Hey, you could be Grandpa Ben. No, he can't.
Yeah.
Grandpa Ben could have been a cool character if it was a good actor. That's what irked me about this movie was the lack of good actors.
But I will say this: I love that we live in an age to where, because of social media and because of the dissemination of information. Sure.
Dissemination of information.
Dissemination of information. That's kind of weird. I love the fact that these stories can get out there to where they're not gated by, you know, Hollywood studios. I like the fact that we're living in a pretty neat little
Don't steal it. Rent it. So more of these movies can be made.
Absolutely.
I'm sure The Void can be watched for free on some
seven fucking bucks.
Pay it.
Pony up the fucking money and let the guys get paid. Just like for all your fucking musicians out there. Music isn't free. Just fucking pay the artist. God.
I agree.
I'm sorry. As much as Lars from Metallica is a dickhead, he still deserves to be paid if you like his music. No, that doesn't mean you have to pay for the 15 renditions of the copies that you get, but at least pay him one time. Come on.
They're rich. They don't need my money. Yes, they do. Because
thanks,
they're
Black
giving
Album.
You content.
At least pay him once.
Pay them everything.
Bailey can't get his golden dolphin bar this time, but maybe next time.
Give us some links.
Oh,
you're
my
drunk.
God. I put a fork in me. Tuesday Night Cigar Club.
You're not
Club
nearly as drunk as you were last episode on our 50th special.
Oh, that's
which
true.
Which hasn't happened yet.
It's true.
But it will.
Or has it? Oh.
We've talked. Just set up air mattresses at the pub. We'll just sleep there.
You can't. You can't.
Why? It's haunted.
I'm not saying. You wake up.
I don't need night terrors.
Look, if you want to wake up and you want to see the black triangle hovering above you, that's your own deal.
I'm out. Go to Tuesday Night Cigar Club on Facebook. Hit at TNCCcast for Twitter. Go to TNCC_podcast for Instagram.
That's about it.
Join the YouTube channel. That's pretty damn cool.
Yes, it is awesome.
It's the best way to watch it. You get to see all this.
It is fantastic.
Soak in my beautiful Bose headphones.
If you don't watch us on YouTube, there's no reason I need to suck in for 3 hours.
All those hours in the gym are wasted.
Boys, this was fun.
It was.
It was. What else can I add to this? Nothing.
Well,
I'm looking at the sea of beers.
I'm impressed, dude. I'm absolutely impressed.
By my sea of consumptions?
Yes, because I know how I'm feeling after my consumption. And I'm like, holy shit, dude.
I am an internet beer expert.
No. You have a problem.
That's something we'll talk about.
And it has nothing to do with your beer consumption.
That's something we'll talk about when the cameras go off. I love that when you're like looking at what you drink, and you're like, hero. And then the other guy's like, you have a problem.
Yeah. Oh, by this booze combined, I am an asshole.
By the booze combined, I am an asshole.
Hey, the Father, the Son, and the Drunken Ghost.
At any rate, congrats on 50 and 51.
Yeah. We're still here. We're still doing what we do. Congrats on 3 years in a row, the best live action music venue in Central Texas.
We try. We try.
It's a night of celebration.
It is a night of celebration.
May the wings of liberty, boys, never lose a feather.
Sayonara, motherfuckers. We'll see you next week.
To learn more about the time I was sucked into a bizarre otherworldly dimension where human beings took on terrifyingly disfigured forms and all the norms of a civilized society were completely absent, replaced by chaos and lunacy, please read my online short story titled An Afternoon at Arby's, One Man's Upside-Down Hellish Descent into a Beef and Cheddar Nightmare, available at keithahowell.com. And in the meantime, to learn more about the cigars and libations enjoyed on tonight's episode, you can visit www.jasomcrawl.com and www.foundersbrewing.com. An upside-down descent. Does that mean you're going up or down? For more on O'Brien's Irish Pub, the live music leader in Central Texas, please visit O'BriensTemple.com and download their free smartphone app, where you'll find full beer listings including over 40 on tap, menu information, and a calendar of upcoming live events. To listen and purchase music heard on tonight's program, check out www.fritzbeermusic.com. Thank you for listening to the Tuesday Night Cigar Club Podcast. This is Keith A. Howell saying, until next time, friends, unless we see you sooner at the pub. So keep it smoky, and for God's sake, keep it ballsy as well.